Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the June 3rd, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I want to point out that we have emergency exits to my right at the back corner and to my left in the front corner. If you have electronic devices, telephones, etc., would you please silence them for the meeting? I wonder if folks would please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call, please?
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chuck?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I'm present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present.
We have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm pleased to present a proclamation tonight, and I'd like to read it. It says, whereas community action agencies were created when the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964 was signed into law, and whereas Tompkins Community Action represents this national network in Tompkins County and has a 48-year history of partnering with low-income households to promote self-sufficiency, and at least 17,980 Tompkins County adults and children, representing 20.3% of the total population, live on incomes at or below the federal poverty guidelines. And whereas Tompkins Community Action has made an essential contribution to individuals and families in Tompkins County by providing innovative and cost-effective programs that promote self-sufficiency, and whereas low-income people require opportunities to improve their lives, thus ensuring that all the county's citizens are able to live in dignity, and whereas Tompkins County, New York State, and the entire United States must continue to wage war on poverty by providing support and opportunities for all citizens, now therefore I proclaim the month of June 2014 as Tompkins Community Action Month in Tompkins County. And we have signed and sealed this as of today. And I believe Lee Dillon from Tompkins County Community Action is here to receive the proclamation. Lee?
I want to thank you for your support and through all these years. It's been 48 years. I have been there for, 28 of them. It's hard to believe. And I've known some of you that long. I really want to thank you. I want to remind you on Friday morning, we're going to be having an annual meeting. We give away a Joe Cassinetti Youth Service Award and also a Community Action Award. I'm going to leave these in case you've lost them in all the papers that you have on your desk. But, again, thank you very much, and I appreciate all the support. Have a good night.
Thank you, Lee. We're going to reorder business a little tonight. We know there are folks here with regard to the jail issue. We also have a presentation about the jail that we're going to have. So we're going to go next to privilege of the floor for the public, and then we will move to those items. Privilege of the floor is the public's opportunity to speak to our legislature under our rules. It is a privilege, and we welcome folks to come and speak for 3 minutes on any topic that they would like to do that. We are requiring that they sign a blue card if they want to speak, and they're available in the back. And if someone hasn't signed it and wants to speak, please pass one up. I'm going to read the rules for speaking under privilege of the floor. This is what, when you sign the card, what you're agreeing to do. I agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. Keeping time here has always been a little troublesome, and we've had our board clerk, Kathy Covert, with signs that holds up, but it's a little difficult sometimes for the folks who are speaking and trying to concentrate on what they say to also keep track of time. So we're going to try something a little different tonight. We're going to have on the screen to my left over here, there's going to be a countdown, and at the end there will be a signal. It'll sound like a telephone ringing, and that'll announce the end of the 3 minutes. So if you haven't wrapped up by then and you're speaking, please wrap up for us so we can move on to the next speaker. First speaker I have tonight is Leslie Schill.
Good evening, everyone. Hi, my name is Leslie Schill. It's nice to be back in the new quarters here. First, I'd like to thank the county legislature and the county planning department. I'm here on behalf of Solar Tompkins this evening, and we really appreciate the ongoing support for this newly launched program that's seeking to double the number of solar photovoltaic installations across this county. We just launched the program on May 27th. We're really flying fast. We already have more than 50 enrollees, and we're looking at over the next year, you know, hundreds of solar installations coming online to small businesses and mostly residences across the county. Tonight, I'm coming here to ask the county legislature to consider opting back in to Section 487 of the New York State Property Tax Law, or the Solar, Wind, and Biomass Energy Systems Property Tax Exemption. Solar Tompkins is really advocating this rapid expansion of small-scale solar PV renewable energy deployment, and we really want to work with the county and hope to find a solution and to create a really positive environment that encourages homeowners, especially as well as small businesses, to consider taking on and switching over to solar. And the small tax exemption, even when you work the numbers down, it's real dollars for small-scale solar, and so it can make the difference between making this marketable or not. And so I just want to thank you in advance for your consideration, and this is something we're very excited about.
Thank you very much. Next speaker I have is Sarah Pines. Please state where you're from, your municipality.
My name is Sarah Pines. I'm from the Catholic Worker, and I'm here to talk about the horror of jail expansion. One, it perpetuates the slave system. Jails are disproportionately Afro-American. If you've got money, you get a good lawyer and you get off. If you don't, you go to jail. The rate of recidivism is a testament to the failure of jails. In contrast to recidivism, if we can provide each prisoner with health care, education, mentoring, and job preparation. In other words, all prisoners get out, so most prisoners get out. So why not prepare them for the world that they're going into? It's cheaper, and it lasts in the long run. And every study has proven that when communities do this, recidivism is highly diminished. So the perpetuating this system is really perpetuating failure for the many years that we've done it. The family of each prisoner is criminalized and punished because the parent isn't there to provide emotional, physical, and financial support. Essentially, we're creating a broken home or a broken family every time we send someone to prison. The support system is destroyed, and there's a horrible role model for the kids. The high cost of this failed prison industrial economy, in contrast to civilian options, is awful. It provides jobs at the cost of lost lives. Most of all, we have to remember that with political pressure and money, one can buy their freedom almost all of the time, i.e., let's look at our Wall Street criminals who impoverished so many millions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, I have Omar Figueredo.
Good evening. My name is Omar Figueredo. I'm a resident here of Ithaca. I live at 602 West Seneca. I know last time that was an issue. People wanted us to say what our address was. And I wanted to talk about the proposed jail expansion. To begin with, I wanted to share two quick quotes of things that were said at the legislature meeting that took place about 2 weeks ago on May 20th. The first quote, "I believe that this county, as much as any, is interested in alternatives to incarceration. I know I'm interested, and many of the people I know are deeply interested in it." The second quote, "We want fewer people in the jail. We want it because we recognize that jails don't do good things for people. They're darned expensive, and we would love for there to be another way." Now, these words did not come from any of the people who were sitting in the public who came to speak out against the proposed jail expansion. These words that I just shared with you came from two members of this very legislature, Mr. Peter Stein and Mr. Will Burbank. I was very glad to have heard these words during that meeting. I agree completely that jails don't do good things for people, as Mr. Burbank said. And as Mr. Stein said, we need real alternatives to incarceration. I'm here today doing what I can to take responsibility for the very real problems involving unfair policing and incarceration practices, things that we've heard from the previous resident and from other residents throughout the past year at least. And I'm asking you, as one of your constituents, to do your part as well as members of this legislature, as in your function as county legislators. You can take responsibility and make a difference by voting against the proposed jail expansion. A vote in favor of the jail expansion will only exacerbate the very problems with jails that at least Mr. Stein and Mr. Burbank publicly claimed they are concerned with: fewer caged people and more just alternatives to incarceration. Voting in favor of a jail expansion will not achieve these goals. If you agree that jails don't do good things for people, and in fact do very bad things to people, all people involved, not only the inmates, but also the prison guards or the corrections officers and everyone around, if you wish that there were other alternatives to incarceration, if you are to be believed the next time you are campaigning for office or making some other kind of claim in public to be serving your constituents, then you must reject the expansion of the jail. It's very simple. As a local resident, voter, and taxpayer, I do not think the county should continue paying the outside jails to cage people arrested in Tompkins County. But it also costs money and many other community values to keep them here. So I know that you're concerned with paying money to other jails to cage the people that are arrested here, but voting in favor of the jail expansion isn't going to solve the problem of sending Tompkins County inmates to other jails. It's not going to stop that. So I'm here and I'm asking you to take responsibility, and especially for those of you who expressed your own dissatisfaction with the mass incarceration problem in the United States and the desire for more just alternatives to incarceration, to take responsibility as county legislators tonight and vote against the proposed jail expansion. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Deborah Dietrich.
Good evening. I'm Deb Dietrich. I'm executive director of OAR. And I'm coming before you to say that in spite of my distaste for jails, prisons, and everything else, OAR and the fact that they don't work, OAR is supporting the addition of 7 beds, the renovation of the jail to house 7 more people. We're doing so for 2 reasons. One is that those are people that are currently people, individuals that OAR is unable to serve when they're housed in Chenango County, Tioga County, Chemung, and other points distant from home and families. OAR provides rides for family members to visit their incarcerated loved ones, and we can't do that when they're out of this county. We also assist them with reentry plans, we assist them with DSS applications, and we assist them with issues with their attorney, assigned counsel, and bail. Those are 7 people on average that we can't reach in any given day. So for us, adding those beds will allow us to serve those 7 clients. In my lifetime, however, I am hopeful that this jail population in Tompkins County will be reduced through many of the ideas that have emerged through the Jail Alternatives to Incarceration Task Force. But they're system changers. They're not going to happen overnight. And so you're not going to see the kind of systemic change that needs to occur in this country in time to avert these 7 beds, in my opinion. Every dollar spent on boarding an inmate out is a dollar that will not be spent on alternatives to incarceration in Tompkins County. And I guarantee you that we've suffered through 5 years of budget cuts until 2 years ago when the legislature restored our funding. And so I know for a fact that you have to pay as a legislature for the board out costs. You are not mandated to pay for alternatives to incarceration. So those dollars are dollars that aren't going to go to serving the client's needs. So that's what I'm here to say tonight, and just thank you for your time.
Thank you. Susie Cook.
Hi, my name is Susie Cook. I chair the county's Criminal Justice Alternatives to Incarceration Board.
You speak up.
I'm a little. Am I taller than you, Deb? Shorter. I could be shorter. CJATI met last week, and everyone very passionately said, we don't know how you can make this decision and us not weigh in. And I'll tell you why. The CJATI board has many, many people on it, filling the spoke of every wheel in the criminal justice system of this county: judges, probation, local magistrates, law enforcement, victims, offenders, mental health services, addiction recovery services, assigned counsel, the DA, OAR, youth services, DSS, community dispute resolution, victims advocates, ex-offenders, assigned counsel. It's everybody. We're an advisory board that is created and mandated under New York state law. We are not an arm of the legislature. We're not county. Our job under state law is to analyze the jail, probation, and ATI populations, and to assist in determining incarceration practices and trends, analyze recent overcrowding problems, and the measures taken by the county to relieve them, review our existing ATI programs, related services, explore new ones. We support the jail renovation project, and there are a variety of reasons, one of which Deb already spoke about, and they're important. Tompkins is very service rich. You've heard before, we're one of the best counties in the state for our ATI programs. We put a lot of money into them. We would rather have our inmates, and they are Tompkins County inmates, we'd rather have them here in our own jail where we can provide them with those services that we have put in place. They can access the services here. Their families can see them. Their attorneys can see them much more easily. If they are not in our jail, they will be somewhere else, and we will be paying for that. The county doesn't put people in jail. So who gets placed in jail? If they are not here where we can serve them, they will be elsewhere, and we will be paying for that. We support it for those reasons, and I did want to thank, there's other people here from CJATI, though a lot of people had conflicts tonight, but the Jail Alternatives Task Force, which we're working on, which Deb mentioned, is going to do, it's going to continue its good works until we report out to the legislature. And when that task force is done, we're getting good ideas, we're going to talk about it. When that task force is done, CJATI, rest assured, will continue to do what we've been doing for decades, and which I think we do very well. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Have Gary Thomas. Please state your municipality. It's not necessary to tell your exact street address.
My name is Gary Thomas. I lived in the same house on Delaware Avenue for 41 years. That's District 3. I come as a citizen, retired professor from Ithaca College in anthropology. What else? I come from the Quaker community, the Catholic worker community, both of which I identify with very much. And I'm also a driver for not the past 9 years of Tuesday mornings for Deb Dietrich, my boss over there. And I'm going to be disagreeing with my boss. So the other person I'm going to be disagreeing with is another person I respect tremendously, and that's my district representative, Carol Schock. Carol Schock and I had excellent correspondence a year and a half ago, where she explained to me the pressure that is exerted upon this legislature to build, quote, a state-of-the-art $20 million jail to double our prison population. They have the authority to do so, and we've come to the end of the line in fighting this unless we provide 7 more beds. I was so blown away by this, the powerlessness of this body. I also was blown away by the fact that she said, I and others in our legislature have been on the bus in the past, going to Albany, speaking out about U.S. policies and the inefficacy of the Rockefeller drug laws. So I said, who am I to disagree with Carol Schock, who has fought this fight far longer than I have? I disagree with Carol Schock, and my executive summary is this, that I think you, if you don't mind my lecturing, I realize this is terribly polite, but you're focusing on the solution, not the problem. I think that solution thinking is how do we get 7 more beds so that we don't board out various prisoners. I think solution thinking is what do we do in order to get the corrections department off our backs. But that's not the problem. Problem thinking is there are too many people in jail who, as Sarah Pine said, who are from different if they were from different socioeconomic class, if they had more formal education, if they were more better employed or more employable, they would not be in jail for the crimes for which they've been arrested. They would have better legal counsel, and they would be able to post bail. The problem is there are too many people in jail because of our drug laws. The problem is there are too many people in jail because there are not enough funds for alternatives to incarceration, which we've talked about. More bail funds for the incarcerated, more funding for counseling for people coming out of jail, more jobs, more job training for the formerly incarcerated, more transitional housing, more affordable housing, more public transit for people to commute to work, more drug recovery programs, more support for OAR services. The problem is there are too many people in jail because there's a high recidivism rate because of all of the above that we lack. The problem is that there are too many people in jail because it is too easy to violate probation. The problem is that we have a mindset that we are willing to increase spending on jails at the very time that we are forced to vote to make cuts in education. The problem is we are focusing on the solution, not the problem. Thank you, and with all due respect, thanks
Thank
for your
you very
service.
Much. James Ricks, please.
Hi, I'm James Ricks. I'm from Ithaca. I noted when I forgot this lady's name that just spoke, she named so many different agencies that are dealing with the prison population. I said, my God, that's a lot of jobs that have to be involved in inmates. But see, my time is running. I'm going to read this as fast as I can because I only have 3 minutes, unlike you guys. So let me get started. It occurs to me that there's something that smells in here, very basic and very disturbing, and pretty hypocritical. When it starts out stinking, how else could it end? Said I heard Gino Bush a couple of weeks ago say that he detected a bit of, I can't say the word because I agreed to this thing here, but he detected some bollocks or bull droppings, and that it felt like this was just a big show to placate people and to push a racist and a classist agenda down our collective throats. In the meetings that I've attended, I've heard many concerned alternatives, many concerns and alternatives to the proposed continuation of a racist prison industrial complex fed by systemic, that's planned, poverty and an unjust justice system that is supported, that's fed by that same poverty with a heavy dose of racism and cold materialism. Materialism that grinds people up and ruins their lives. There's big money in the prison system right now. The crime rate in this country in the last 30 years has fluctuated maybe 1 point up or down in the last 30 years, but the incarceration rate has quadrupled. That's problematic to me. I mean, something that was not considered a crime to be incarcerated for at one point, now it is. Alternatives, having a hard time reading my own writing here, excuse me, but that these alternatives that seem to be really important to most people, they seem to be paternalistically listened to here and then uniformly just swept away with things about variances and mandates and people being shipped out of jail. But I want to get to my point. In the beginning of this legislature, I'm finished quick. In the beginning of this legislature, you started out with the Pledge of Allegiance, okay? And it speaks about, you know, in this country that all men are considered equal and with indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You know, and when you vote against the for bonding this, you're telling a lie. It's not about justice for all. When Sarah explained that, it's economic, it's racial, and instead of trying to deal with how this starts and educating people so they're not out there thinking about alternative ways of earning a living, you know, they have tools to deal with. And I don't know why people seem very resistant to trying to supply marginalized people with tools that can help extract them from a pretty dismal prognosis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I get your name wrong, please correct me. Dubian Adley.
So my name is Dubian Adley. I'm a student at Ithaca College. I guess the time is running. I just have a couple of questions for the legislature, and then I'll be on my way. Just a couple of quick questions. I've seen many people express their dissatisfaction with this jail expansion, and I've been wondering where the concerns for their opinions are. Has this legislator planned to go through with this jail expansion, irregardless of the opinions of the members of this community? Is it the presumption that the legislator knows what is best for them and the people in these communities in spite of the opinions of the community members? Is the legislator comfortable with the paternalism that is involved in this power play of politics? I am speaking as one of the people who are subject to the decisions that are made by this legislator. I am subject to the violence involved in jailing and police brutality. Is this legislator subject to the decisions that it is making on behalf of the community? Is this an easier decision to make because the legislator is not subject to its decisions? Does this legislator really believe that it has the authority and legitimacy to make these decisions, given the fact that it is not subject to the violence inherent in jail expansion? And those are the questions that I have.
Thank you. Jamie Hendricks.
Hello, my name is Jamie Hendricks, and you probably all know my position already, so I'm just giving some reflections. Since you haven't voted yet, I don't know whether we will make history here tonight, that 8 of you will vote against the jail expansion, or whether we have a tragedy here, or a comedy, even a farce. So we would be making history if 8 legislators kind of decide and have the courage to kind of break away from the perceived majority and like vote their conscience. And that basically means is that they acknowledge that there are no data. We haven't seen the daily board out data. We haven't seen the data just without the woman and the medical cases and the minors that they're being boarded out. And we haven't seen the data from the new program that is making sure there is an attorney available when people get arraigned. So if we include all this data, we may actually see that there is not really a need for this 7-bed addition, and that there's definitely not a need to do it by building this monstrosity that is called this a recreational room. And just in case you didn't realize, just I'm really approaching this from the perspective of taxes, of people that go to Loaves and Fishes to save money so they can pay all their taxes, and of people whose houses foreclosed because they don't have enough money to pay for everything. So it's from the perspective of these people that I'm speaking, and I'm emphasizing that there is just no hard data that you will save money because there are these alternative ways to save money, and you never looked at them. These alternative ways that require not to build a jail. And now I would like to stress the farce, the comedy, the absurdity. Just we have here a person present who is running for Congress, and she wants us to believe that she's going to make a difference. But what she's doing, she's like ignoring the input from her constituents. She's acting like the stereotypical tax and spend Democrat. So she's feeding completely into the Tea Party stereotype. And I just don't understand why this is happening. And I'm just leaving you, and I hope you're as perplexed as I am, just that there is this seeming momentum to continue with your jail expansion while there are all these other questions that have not been addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Susie Kosak.
Is this okay? Yeah, it's working. Before my time starts, I'd like a show of hands from the legislators. How many of you had a chance to read the email that was sent to each of you yesterday morning via your legislative secretary?
Well, you know, they can respond or not respond. That's up to them.
There were a lot of emails. Okay. So there was about 3 or 4 of you that raised your hand. Okay. I'm shocked that no one here in this room took the time to investigate the history, the current recent history of boarding out in our county. I was on the county, I was a commissioner with the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission from 1992 to 98 for 7 years. And I was on the jail committee. We met monthly with then Sheriff Emery Guest and jail administrator Gordy, somebody, I forget his last name. Okay, so Okay. The jail was actually built in 1986, and the people moved in 1987. Okay. Capacity was 56. Okay. 6 years later, the jail became overcrowded. We had to board out and pay money to send inmates to other counties. We then were able to get a variance and increase the capacity of the jail to 75. 6 years later, in 1993, we again had to board out and pay for people to go to the other counties. We got a variance that allowed us to have 93 in our county jail. 6 years later, in 2006, oh, that was when we got the variance. And here we are again today, boarding out. How does this make any sense to any of you to do the same thing again? It doesn't work. Can anyone in their right mind think that this is a good idea? And why didn't anybody do this research and tell us that this is the fourth time since 1987 that we've been paying for boarding out? Do you see that it's not the problem? That's not the solution. Mr. Thomas, thank you. We're just putting a Band-Aid on. We're spraying a little thing on the fire. The fire keeps burning and coming. You can't possibly think. I know many of you. You're bright, intelligent people. You can't possibly think that this is going to make a difference. Because you know what? As soon as we finish that expansion, 6 years later, which has been the pattern every 6 years, we're going to be boarding out again. Come on, people. How does this make any sense? Peter, I appreciate you coming and talking to us after the last meeting, saying that the only reason you're supporting us is to save the county money. You're not saving the county money. We're going to pay $1.4 million by the time it's all put together with our interest. And then 5-6 years later, we're going to board out again, Peter, and everyone else. You can't do this. It's insanity. That's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over again when it doesn't work and expecting a different outcome each time. That's the definition of insanity. How can you think that this makes any sense? What, did anybody in this room do look back on the history of boarding out? Anybody here? Sir, put your hand up high. And Nate, you too? Did you find what I found?
No. Could you conclude, please? Your time's up.
Yeah, my time is up. All of our time is up. Because I'll tell you, in 6 or 7 years, after that thing is done, we're going to be boarding out. This makes no sense. You can't do it. Okay. And read my thing, because we go into the mentor program. I'm the person that talked about the mentor program last time. These people in jail, as you know, are coming from poverty, for the most part, coming from poverty. 90-something percent have either a learning disability and or a mental health or emotional disability. They don't know how to navigate the system and make it work on their behalf. They do need someone to take them by the hand and lead them through it. That's what a mentor does. Let's stop this absurdity. You guys are in some kind of a popularity contest about, oh, let's all jump on this boat because this is what's popular. We're going to go and pass this thing and make this happen.
Please conclude.
I'm getting there. Thank you. So it's just absurd. You've got to think a little more deeply. Use your intelligence. Use your insights. Use your knowledge. Come on. Postpone this. If you have to, you don't have to vote today. Postpone until next time. Go and do the research. Call people at the jail. I don't know. Ken, you're pretty new. I don't know that you know the history, but maybe you can look it up and you can tell folks about the repeated pattern of boarding out. That's cost us a fortune every time. Okay. Thanks a lot.
May we have Bill Russin, please?
Hello, my name is Bill Russin. I'm here as the CEO of Cayuga Addiction Recovery Services. I also reside in Freeville, New York. First, I want to thank the legislature for giving me a few minutes. I'm in much the same situation as Ms. Dietrich in terms of how I feel about this. I think it's fair to say that I stand second to none, and that includes everyone in this room, including the good men and women of our legislature, to be abhorrent that we live in a society that requires us to incarcerate people. But we do. I feel in much the same way as Chief Justice Brandeis did when asked about the depression, and somebody said to him, well, it'll all get better eventually. And he said, yes, but people have to eat in the short term, not the long term. So from my perspective, I'd like to say that every person that gets boarded out and sent out of this county does not receive, for instance, evaluation services to decide if or what kind of substance abuse services that they need. We're trying to presently set up a system in which we do evaluations using the web visitor system at the jail, which will allow us to do even more evaluations. And so from that perspective, while this is indeed something that I think all of us in this room, especially you who have to sit with the decision and make decision, find horribly uncomfortable and would love to have generated a third alternative here. But unfortunately, we are left with things as they are. And from that perspective, my whole point of being here and my point in discussing this with the group is that each person that goes out of this jail for board outs does not get the needed services. Should those services be available in a much deeper, systematic way in other places besides the county jail? Absolutely, without fear of contradiction, I'm sure everybody in this room feels exactly that way. We should not need a jail as a society, but we do, and it's here. So using those things, I ask you to support this jail project because it will allow necessary services to be delivered. Because believe me, if people are sitting in other jails and other places, they are not accessing those services. Okay? So, again, thank you for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. That's the last blue card I have. We'll suspend at this point.
One more.
All right, but I'll take these two, but that'll be all, please. If anybody else wants to speak, send up a blue card. Clara Grady.
Hi, everybody. We've been coming for almost a year now. I know you've been at this for a while, and some of us have been coming. Many of the students that were coming to these meetings have gone home, and many of the people that came with their voices and their signs have given up, saying it's useless to come. And so maybe there's a smaller voice tonight. But I want to just say something about perspective. What we see does depend on where we stand, and I really appreciated, Dubian, your words. I appreciated everybody's words tonight so far. But that piece of being on the receiving end of the policies that are enacted, the bond, the vote that is cast, and those voices are very significantly not present here tonight, and have many of those voices have not been here throughout this process, because the people most likely to be in the jail are not accustomed to coming to these chambers, and they're not accustomed to having their voice heard when it comes to legislation. So just noting that, and that makes seems really important to say. Recently, in the last few years, there's a film called Race: The Power of an Illusion. I'm really grateful for the people who brought it to our community. How many people have seen that movie here? Important to know. In that movie, we get to see what systemic racism looks like on an economic scale. And we wonder how none of us would possibly make the kind of dramatic and awful choices that end up being made on a personal level, we think. And yet, here we have this. In the movie, you see how not racism has continued from the legacy of slavery up until now. So here is where a moment, it seems like, where the rubber hits the road. And again, we're not hearing from all the voices of the people that are in the jail. We are hearing from people who whose work and their job, their pay is working in the jail or working in services. But I want to add the voice of Ruthie Gilmore, who's an abolitionist like Angela Davis. She and both Angela came to Ithaca some weeks back and spoke. And Ruthie spoke about the importance of not normalizing systems. So when it comes into our laps to make a difference and a choice and not say, this is the way it is, we should not need a jail, but we have it. And so that's what. So I think the conversation I'm hearing is that actually, it's that thinking that gets us, keeps going on the trajectory. And from where I stand, I see arrows. And we're either feeding the arrow that spends the first $90,000 to pay a consultant, not La Bella, but alternatives to incarceration. That's the first $90,000. And then on and on. So that if we continue to send money in the arrows that are incarcerating people, that's not being spent in the other ways. Anyway, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Nancy Morales.
Hello, thank you. So I'm a resident here at Ithaca. I'm also an Ithaca College lecturer for the Center for Study of Culture, Culture and Ethnicity. So I have a few points that I just want to reiterate and highlight again about the urgency to please vote no for this jail expansion. One, it's not too late. You still can all vote no, and we hope that you do. Two, just one understanding that needs to be clear, that there is no such thing as a humane jail expansion. There is no such thing as violence is reproduced by arresting someone and putting them in jail. It actually reproduces and perpetuates more violence. So the fact that we're asking to expand the jail, to have a more bigger and better expansion, jail expansion, there is no such thing. So I just want to make that clear, that there is no such thing as a humane jail. Jail itself is already violence in itself. Two, I just want to also just share that if we can focus more on how to prevent violence by simply by not arresting people or thinking about the ways in which we don't arrest people, as we've heard before with other folks, that it actually, we don't see, right, an actual decrease in violence, in arrests. We actually see an increase more and more. So I just want to reiterate and highlight that. And also just to think about the question about what is at stake if we continue to invest in this jail expansion. If there's not seven beds, if there will be seven beds, then what's next? So really thinking about stop investing in this jail expansion or just stop investing in jails altogether and thinking about that. So again, there is no such thing as a humane jails or humane jail expansion. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Begg, is it S.H. Begg?
That's me.
Thank you.
My name is Susan Begg. I live in the city of Ithaca. I have a little laryngitis. I rise to speak in support of this proposition to build the option B for the outdoor rec area as opposed to the other option. I speak from experience. I spent 3 months in the county jail before waiting to move on to Albion Correctional Facility. And this outdoor rec new proposition is or option is far superior and in the best interest of the people who do have to spend time at the jail as opposed to the original one where it was in the West. So for anyone who's going to vote on it, I think you're voting on the right option as opposed to choosing the lesser, less expensive one. I think it's worth a little bit of extra money to provide a reasonable rec experience for the people that are incarcerated there. I'm also on the Alternatives to Incarceration Task Force. I agree that it would be nice not to send as many people to jail. But in some instances, like in mine, people belong in jail for certain offenses and need to be there for a while before they move on to other venues, whether it be prison or out into treatment. It's one of the things we're working on with the Alternatives to Incarceration. I don't think there is such a world where we don't sometimes need a jail. I would like to hope that the ATIs that we're working on will reduce the jail population over time. But what I've learned so far in the task force is if most of the people that are sent to jail are there for reasons that we as a community don't have any control over, their statutory sentencing guidelines that we can't control, there are our system of local court justices, and we don't have control necessarily over the amount of bail that they choose to set. And therefore, I think if we really want to reduce the jail population over the long term, it has to be done through legislation at the state level, and that's where people's efforts should be put. Court justices, statutory. Yeah, basically, to reduce jail population, you've got to go up to the state legislature and start changing some laws and some statutes. We're doing as much as we can here in Tompkins County. We have a very low rate of incarceration. Like I said, every now and again, somebody needs to be in jail. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll suspend while we put down the screens. Okay, thank you. Joe or Rel, who's going to start?
I can start, but I'll very quickly hand it off to Mark Kukufka, who all of you know is with Labella Architects and has been with us for some time on this project. He's been through a number of variations on a proposal for the jail renovation, including the outdoor rec yard, and is here tonight to present the option that has come through public safety at its last meeting. And again, this is iteration number whatever, 8, 9, 10. We call it option B because there were two options presented at the public safety committee a couple of weeks ago with two different orientations, slightly different building designs. And the committee recommended, I believe unanimously, that we proceed with option B. So I think many of you have seen this in your packets, but Mark is here tonight to walk through what option B looks like, and I think there is a budget that goes along with that as well. So, Mark Kukufka.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Mark Kukufka, Labella Associates. So just a briefing and going through this, as Joe has said. So I'll use the mouse as a pointer if necessary. So, Tompkins County Jail, I just got a bird's eye view aerial here so we could see this. So the outdoor recreation yard is in the center here. We have this option locates the outdoor recreation yard on the west side of the yard, with the east side of the yard maintaining the views to the east, while putting the shelter, on the west. And we've had to rework that a little bit to make it work with the sheriff's office from a functional standpoint. So just a couple of the existing photos of the existing conditions in indoor-outdoor that we're converting into the seven-bed dormitory, and some of the outdoor conditions there of the pavement and recreation area. So as you can see now from, this is another bird's eye view. So it is now pushed back inside the courtyard, we'll call it, with the primary three-sided enclosure with a fourth side for wind and weather currents, so that we can operate this outdoor area as many days as possible throughout the year. The goal is to be able to offer outdoor recreation 365 days of the year in order to not have to do an alternative indoor recreation period. And so this shutter, we're going to have an outdoor shutter on here. It'll be open all the time except for on inclement weather days as determined by the jail administrator. With the new recreation area, with the new dormitory area being converted in here, we do have a chain link fence here, walkway, in order to help segregate the population from the dormitory population to the cell population as they gain access, their own personal access to the recreation area. So here it is, just again in plan, the three-side enclosure. We've modified visibility and access in and out of here for the safety of the officers and the inmates. And then this 10 by 20 foot opening that we will have with a overhead coiling shutter in here. This becomes a wind barrier. This does not become a corrections barrier, just in order to utilize this shelter, as I said, as many days as possible throughout the year. We're going to continue with the final design. We'll continue to look for ways to help reduce the cost of this. And we've talked with the sheriffs about lowering the height of this thing to make this thing as affordable as we can. We had to add the glass block on either side because we don't want an area that the inmates could hide while an officer is on one side of the shelter or another from a safety and operational standpoint. We did put benches as kind of requested. We have some concrete benches in here, and then whatever other recreation equipment that the county will provide. The inside, just the seven-bed, the conversion of this, the seven-bed dormitory that we are creating in here. The unique feature here is there is no increase in officers. The existing correction officer here that watches the current other four dormitories has been permitted to watch the fifth dormitory. So this is a financial bonus to the county in order to be able to convert this area. So the option B numbers, as is done in phases, we have to do phase one is the outdoor recreation, yard first. When that is complete, we will then take over and do the dormitory option. There's your subtotal, project-related soft costs, and the total opinion of construction and project cost to date is around $896,000. In the schedule, I have, from this legislative meeting we here on June 3rd, and then we've, if you approve this project, that we have projected some dates for moving forward with the project and project completion.
We have questions from the legislators. I guess not. Mark, thank you for coming down and presenting that to us. Wait a minute, we have one over here. Martha Robertson.
Hi, Mark. Thank you. The completion date, the April 2015. Do you remember? Is that how far off of that date? Is that from the original hope that we had? Is it? That seems about what we had projected.
Back in September, as the project was moving forward, I think we were looking to have to a legislative vote in February or March, and so we're March, April, May, June, so you're roughly 3 months off of, we'll call it, the original September schedule.
Carol Chop.
Yeah, can you go back to the page with the cost projections? What would be the costs of phase one versus phase two, total costs, if we went with one of those portions versus the other?
We have the numbers. I'd have to break them out just to. I mean, if you just did one and not the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to reassemble the number because a portion of the soft costs obviously would go down, you know, and in order to, you know, assemble that in there. But they're not proportional, you know, phase one and phase two are not proportional. So we'd have to reassemble that for you.
And are they physically possible to separate and make separate decisions about?
I think it's up to the sheriff from an operational standpoint. You can't do phase two without phase one. Could you do phase one without phase two?
Gary, are you still looking for
an
answer?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to understand because the phase two is the dorm improvements.
Correct. And so.
So could you not build the massive structure? But what would the cost be if you still needed to get people out there?
Yeah, operationally, I think the commission and the jail operations, the goal of this is that they are currently using that recreation area as their indoor recreation area. And through the tours of the jail and looking at the project, that it's going to be very cumbersome for the jail if they built the dorm and lost that indoor recreation. It's very cumbersome operationally, safely, and the jail staff can speak more eloquently to that than I can. But that was the emphasis here and has been approved with the commission, is that you want to replace your recreation space first and have a legal place to do your recreation and then move into the convert the recreation space into a dorm.
Thank you.
Martha?
A couple of questions that actually I'm going to ask for on behalf of the public. Not that I have the questions, but I hope you'll clarify these for the record. You've got phase one and phase two. Is there a phase three? And if so, what is that supposed to be? A lot of people are talking about phase three. And I don't.
I can't. I am not under contract for any phase three, so.
Joe?
Well, as a part of the original design, we commissioned Labella to look beyond these first two phases, because there was another idea that was if the sheriff would vacate the building entirely, move law enforcement and move civil to a different place, that would free up other parts of that building for different uses, including some beds. So we asked them at that time, go ahead and show us what that would look like. Do some design there. And it was really there as a contingency for the long-term future, to have something that we could say there is a longer-term plan, that if we ever got to the point of, you know, looking beyond where things are now, if the situation presented, and again, I'm talking very long-term, there would be something on a piece of paper to be able to show the state. We have been very clear throughout, including in the resolution, where we approved funding to do that it's not our plan to proceed with phase three, that it's there for the very long term. I think there was a price tag put on it. It was not a significant amount of money to do interior improvements, but in terms of the total cost of proceeding with a project like that, it would be very significant because we would have to find a new home for the sheriff to be able to free up that entire building for jail use. So it was really a contingency plan that was put in place because it was much more economical to do it that way than it would have been to wait until later.
Okay, and the idea of freeing up space for jail use is for classrooms and other kinds of program space that we are desperately in need of. Everybody agrees within the jail to improve the program. We have some programs, but we're really struggling for to have enough to meet the, you know, all the things we would like to do there.
Right.
So there's no phase three. There's no proposal. There's no...
There's not. Again, there's a design to show what it would look like. But again, if you go back and read the resolution that was passed at the time funding was granted to do this, we made it very clear.
Okay. And as far as, maybe, again, this is probably a Joe or a Ken Lansing. Sheriff's question. The approval of how many staff are required, corrections officers are required to supervise the indoor space, that decision is made by the Commission on Corrections, correct? Okay, the Commission on Corrections, the Corrections Union has nothing to do with it. It's the State Commission.
Martha, would you like Ken Lansing to come to the microphone?
He said right, but
we need microphones when people are talking here.
I guess I'd ask the next question, which is about the letter that you received recently. If you would tell the public about the process of receiving variances, how often those are updated, and the letter that you received recently.
Well, it used to be when I first became sheriff, the policy for the state was once a year. For the variances. They changed that, I think, a couple years ago to do it every 6 months just to prove how serious they are about granting these variances. So the last letter we got, they want to see and what our long-range plans are, as Joe spoke to. There is no phase three at this point in time. If something did come about, it would definitely make the corrections facility more congenial for classrooms and things like that. We really don't have any room to put any more cells in there, especially not the kind that we're putting in at this point in time. They have to be more secure. But the variance is every 6 months. The next time I have to request another variance will be the end of November, which will hopefully be granted in December for another 6 months. I don't see them changing that at this point in time because they told us in February when the commissioner came over and spoke to all the sheriffs that were there for the winter conference that they're very serious about this and they want to see that the counties are trying to do something to accommodate the bed space that they need.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. Phase one cost is $558,000 ballpark. The original plan that came to us, I don't know, 6 months ago, was somewhat $80,000 less. Am I close to that?
Yeah, $35,000 to $40,000 less than the previous plan that we had in September.
So by design change and whatever else, it's been added.
$35,000 to $40,000.
$35,000 to $40,000. Thank you.
Anyone else? Then I'm going to turn to Brian Robison. Brian, I wondered if you would move the resolutions that you have from your committee, and if you need to preface it, go right ahead.
I don't believe I need to preface. Any of these, but I will move Resolution J, ID 4845, as revised as adopted by committee.
That's in your packets, yes. Your red folders.
Yes.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion.
Yes, I've learned much throughout this over a year process, and a couple of things I've learned. I heard someone talking tonight about boarding out and the cost, and when I came on this legislature 8 years ago, the boarding out costs were nearly $900,000 a year. In this day and time, it is roughly in the range of $250,000 a year. I have learned also from looking at jail stats over many years that they don't vary much. When we have variances in place, the number is within 8 or 10 every month of the same. Before the variances, we were boarding out so many people that caused the cost to rise to $800,000 or $900,000. And to me, that's a real waste of taxpayer money, in the sense that it's money that could be going to the programs that people are talking about in CJATI and other kinds of things. And, oh, no, we're sending that to another county, by the way, to pay their bond issues that when they built bigger jails. And it seems like to me only common sense to think that what we're trying to do is keep ourselves reasonably fluid in terms of money, and also fall within the range and the rules of the commission, so that we can demonstrate to those hated state people by some that we're making an effort. And I think we have a history in this county of making more than just an effort. We spend a lot of money on ATI programs, multiples over almost any county nearby. And I think our rate shows that. I'm the first person in the room, and I would hope that others would join me. I don't want anyone in jail. I don't want to, I don't want to ruin people's lives. I spent 30 years of my life teaching people how to read, write, and do math, and so that they could exist in a world that all of you are lucky enough to live in. And, I think people make mistakes. They make bad choices. And society says something has to happen about that. And it does happen. Another thing I've learned, very important, the median number of days by individuals, inmates in our jail, is 8 days. So we really don't have, we have people in and out of our jail based on trials, what's happening, sentences, things like that. So we're in a sense kind of a place that it's a dropping off point for some people who have made bad choices on the way to other places, maybe. But, clearly it's something we have to have. I was especially taken with a comment by Susan Begg, someone who's experienced our jail. And I think that's an amazing thing. You can stand up and talk about this thing. I think we're trying to do the best we can with what we're handed, and I think this solution is the best way to handle it at this point. And because I don't really want to be a part of building a $30 million jail, which would be on the horizon if we're not able to do the things that we're doing here. So I'm going to vote yes for this.
Others like to speak. Nathan Shinagawa.
My comments are going to be a little bit more general, but it does direct to the subject matter. And so one of the things that I hear from public comment and through the letters that I've received and conversations that I've had, people will ask me, how can I support ATI programs and also at the same time support jail expansion? And I think that the assumption is different for the person that I'm talking to versus me, because I tend to think of the world with the word "and." And a lot of folks that are talking to me are using the word "or." You can only support ATI or support jail expansion. And I don't agree with that assumption. I believe in the word "and." And just like, when I was growing up, my parents would tell me, well, there's good and bad people. And sometimes they're good and bad people throughout their lives. Sometimes they have good times, sometimes they have bad times, right? But we have to acknowledge that not everybody's bad forever, not everybody's good forever. There's an "and" there. Recently, my brothers have moved in with me, who are teenagers, and they moved in about a year and a half ago. And people said to me, well, Nate, how can you support your family and take on, you know, still do well at your job. And the assumption there was I'd have to choose. But I don't have to choose. If I'm willing to work for it, I could do both. And I feel like I have. You know, when I look at my hospital, I see how people will say to me, staff will say to me, well, Nate, you're focused on money. Well, what about the patients? Well, you know what? I'm focused on money because I'm focused on the patients. Because without money, I can't pay for good doctors. I can't hire nurses and give them fair wages. I can't invest in new technology and new hardware. You know, I can't give the money, have the margin to do the actual mission of the organization, right? There's an and there. Likewise, in the legislature, we have local, I believe that we have local control, but in this government system, we also have federal control. We have jobs that we need to fight for, and at the same time, we can fight for the environment. You'll hear people all the time say, oh, it's either jobs and the environment. No, it's jobs and the environment. Is it new technology and growth or preserving history? No, it's both. It's having new technology and growth and preserving history. And so likewise, I plan on supporting alternative to incarceration programs as strongly as I ever have for the past 8 years. And I think that the folks around this room that can look at my voting record over 8 years will see that I've supported those programs. But at the same time, I will be supporting this project today because I believe that this project will help us actually serve those folks that we're trying to help with these ATI programs too. It's a world of and. And so, you know, to me, or, the word or, is limiting, you know, it's absolutist, it's really destructive. But and acknowledges, you know, the complexity, the challenges, and I think the openness that exists in life, you know, in work, and in the decisions that we have to make in this legislature, especially tonight. Thank you.
Carol Chalk.
Well, in that same spirit of and, the questions that I was asking were trying to get at, are there ways to find the money to increase our commitment to ATI and still not have to send people an hour from home? I do believe that jails in this country and our jail, I've heard it several times, you know, it's inhumane. I also believe that we need to stop sending people an hour or more away from families, lawyers, and services when they do stray, or come into conflict with laws that I think are unjust, but I don't get to write. And I believe that we need to change the paradigm and find ways to increase ATI services. But a first step to make sure that what our commitment is, during my time in the legislature, I've been part of budget discussions where we have talked about whether we could continue to afford that. And so I would like us, if we're going to do this, to add some wording to this, and I'd like to do it in two steps. There's two sets. And one is really just a whereas. It doesn't change, the resolution itself, other than to add.
Carol, are you moving an amendment?
I'm moving an amendment to add a whereas. Tompkins County stands by its commitment to provide a robust array of alternatives to incarceration programs.
Is there a second to the amendment?
I'll second that amendment.
Seconded by Will. Discussion on the amendment.
Where would you put that, Carol?
Oh, I don't care where we put it. I was going to put it just before the first resolved, but I don't have a strong preference about where to put it, just that we put it.
Can you read it again?
Whereas the Tompkins County Legislature stands by its commitment to provide a robust array of alternative to incarceration programs.
I have Mike Sigler, then Brian.
I have no real objection to that amendment. I think it's unnecessary. I don't think you're going to find a county in the state that's more committed to this. So, I mean, I don't think it's anything objectionable, but it's almost like saying, I don't know, like we haven't been doing enough, and I don't know. I think you have. I mean, I don't know.
On the amendment, Brian, then Peter.
I'm kind of where Mike is in that we're dealing with a resolution talking about design and construction. And, you know, I'm with him. Our commitment to ATIs has always been stellar. I'm sure it's going to continue to be, and it will probably improve. Now, Carol, in answer to your question, in terms of money, we are running roughly, the figures going around of roughly $250,000, at least in the last several years on average for board outs. The debt service, I don't even know about this figure. With the higher figure of 910, the debt service was around $65,000 a year, roughly.
Yeah, at 910, it's $67,580.
Okay. Quick math, that's a savings of $185,000 a year. Now, it's not, I'm not suggesting that it's a zero-sum game in that, okay, now we have $185,000 to put into ATI programs. We haven't even received the recommendations from the task force as of yet. My guess is that probably some of that savings, we will get recommendations to ask for a bit of that money, and we're going to have to decide on that on a case-by-case basis. But the savings is there simply by virtue of doing the project.
On the amendment, Peter Stein.
I'm not a great fan of whereases, and we do use a lot of them, but the whereases in general support the resolution. And I certainly do not believe that we ought to do this jail expansion because we believe in alternatives to incarceration. I'm sure there must be an action item coming, and I would prefer to see the action item and decide that than to put in a whereas that supports it. So I'll vote against this because I think it's added out of order, that we ought to have something that we want to do that this supports. I hope that's clear.
Martha Robertson, let's see if we can vote on the amendment.
Just a wee bit of history first. Standing by our commitment to provide a robust array. I think we started electronic monitoring in this county, what, in like 1992, Susie? That's a yes, 1992. I was at a NYSAC conference a couple years ago when the Chemung County executive came to present his great success in new alternatives to incarceration, and what had they done 5 years ago maybe? They started doing electronic monitoring. I had gone to this presentation hoping to hear some great new idea, and it was something we'd been doing for 15 years. We didn't have a drug court in this county until, I think, 2000. So everything that was done while Emory Guest was sheriff was with electronic monitoring, pretty much the only ATI. Emory Guest was not a champion of alternatives to incarceration, and the programs that we started didn't start till 2000 with Judge Rally starting the city drug court. And day reporting, we didn't start till 2001. So you can't measure the effectiveness of alternatives to incarceration that we'd only put in place in 2000 and 2001. Can't look at that in 1998 or 7 or 4. So the commitment has been longstanding, but we've been growing it. We've been continuing it. When I... Yeah, we fought to keep day reporting even when we had to cut so many other programs during the recession. And basically, if we don't you know, if we're looking for money to enhance our alternatives, I'm not sure where else we're going to find it. I will support Carol's whereas. Sometimes it's obvious, but you just have to say the obvious. And I think it doesn't hurt anything. I'm happy to see it there. We have lots of dangling whereases. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to match one-to-one with a resolved, and I'm waiting to see what the resolved is. I don't know that I'll support a change in the resolved. But I think it's fine to restate our longstanding, I'm going to say pioneering commitment to ATIs that this county has been pursuing for decades.
Are we ready to vote on the amendment?
Can I just say something real quickly?
Certainly,
Martha.
Listen.
Martha, you're talking 5 years ago in the executive in Chemung County. It was just this year we were at NYSAC and hearing of other counties doing just the exact same thing now.
All right. Does anyone need to have the whereas reread? Dooley?
No, is there going to be a resolve that you're also going to propose, Carol?
I believe so. It may depend on the result of this.
We just have to vote on it. We have an amendment before us.
Thank you.
Martha?
Sometimes people will say, I'd like to add a whereas and a resolved, and quickly somebody raises their hand. I move to separate. I mean, I think it's fine to look at one and then the other.
All right, we have an amendment. Does anyone need to have it reread? Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of the amendment, adding the whereas that Carol read to us, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm missing somebody. 1, 2. Put your hands up, those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So that fails. Now we're back on the main motion.
No, I did say I had two items.
Well,
okay. I want to respond to the people who requested
Carol.
Action rather than just a whereas, an empty statement of what we believe. And you know that I've floated the idea of finding a way to commit us to spending the savings on alternatives to incarceration programs. And I hear that people are saying we don't know the exact amount, what it'll be in the future. We don't know how many board outs there will end up being, you know, what the climate may be. And we don't necessarily know the timing of exactly when the savings start coming in. And so I have gone back to the drawing boards and attempted something that separates the notion of timing and amounts, but that would read.
This is, you're moving this as an amendment?
Amendment, yes. It's a resolved, resolved further. When and if savings are realized from reduced board out costs, I've been through so many iterations. Further, when and if savings are realized from reduced board out costs, the legislature will consider implementing additional alternatives to incarceration measures. I said consider.
Is there a second for that amendment?
Does anybody want it read again?
Not seeing a second. All right. Sorry, Carol, that fails for lack of a second. We'll go back to the main motion, and I have next Leslin being Claiborne to speak, and then Brian Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm by no means naive to think that we add 7 beds and we immediately stop boarding out folks. So I don't want anyone to walk out of here thinking that, you know, this is what it is. I spent a fair amount of time, you know, in my life being up in the jail, trying to get some of the very folks we're talking about out of jail, because we know we have just a system that doesn't necessarily work as justly as it should. I am not supporting this resolution. Several months ago, when we first started talking about this, had brought to this body a resolution for a moratorium to just put a hold on this while we see what the task force that we had put in place comes up with as a way of trying to reduce jail population. I am still in that same mindset. It was my hope that we would hear, that we would get information. We would look at that information and see what are the things that we can put in place to try to reduce jail population. I also said on this very floor that I am not an anti-jail by any means. We live in a society where things happen and people go to jail. And Susan, thank you for sharing that sometimes it just is what people need. I can't change the justice system. I can't change some of the national laws that are out there, and that's just the way it is. Single-handedly, I can't. But I really hope that this body would have given the task force the time to be able to come back to us with some recommendations that we can put in place to see how and if they will work. That is my main reason for not supporting this at this time.
I have Peter Stein, Mike Sigler, myself, and Will Burbank. Peter?
I think I first heard about this idea of adding the 7 extra beds 2 years ago. The first time I heard about it, I was very enthusiastic about it, and my enthusiasm hasn't changed over all that period of time. It's a good idea. It does not increase the number of people who are going to be in jail, no matter what anyone says. I have heard no rational argument that says that there's a connection between the number of people that are in the jail or the number of people that are sentenced to jail and the fact that we are building 7 extra beds. I've heard no rational argument to support that. I am a strong advocate of alternatives to incarceration. I've supported them in any of the times that I've come there. I'm enthusiastic about them, as enthusiastic as anyone about that. I will vote for this resolution. I have never wavered. I've never had any doubts from the beginning, no matter what I have heard.
I have Mike Sigler.
Thank you, Michael. I just wanted to start by saying that I definitely believe we have too many people in jail. I think that there are too many things that are illegal, and that is certainly something we should work on. I want to say, too, that I have definitely put a lot of thought into this. This has not come easily for me when I consider this. I have listened to each and every one of you when you've gotten up to speak. It seems like we are debating whether or not to expand our jail. I'm here to tell you, we already did. The jail is already expanded. We just are housing people in other counties. This state has these beds. They're just not here. So when we say we're going to expand our jail or not, it's already done. So now what we need to talk about is, where do we go from here? Originally, I asked for a 6-month moratorium. I didn't know if we needed a year. A year would have been fine. I thought 6 months would be okay. It's June. I mean, we've gotten there. And this plan has gone through different alliterations of what to do. And the plan as it looks now is pretty satisfying. I mean, when you look at the plan and what's going to be done, somebody said that this would not end board outs. You're right. It won't. I mean, I asked for the numbers. Somebody said, you don't have the data. Actually, we do have the data. I mean, I asked for how many people boarded out were women and children, juveniles, not really children, obviously, but it was about 77. It was above 70. So you're talking about 40% of the board outs are people who were still going to have to board out. That still leaves 120 people that we don't. And you've heard from people, and I thank you for coming. I mean, the people from ATI came, and they're talking to you. And I mean, The gentleman over here from the drug advocacy is here, and he's telling you, listen, I can't help these people if they're not here. I can't do it. It's not physically possible. So it leaves me questioning, you know, again, the jail's already been expanded. They're just not here. I want to say somebody else said that voting for this jail expansion is like the popular thing to do. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know who you're talking to. This is like the least popular thing that any of these people is voting on. None of these people want this. None of them want to see a larger jail. So the fact that they're voting for it gives me pause. Some things did come out of this whole procedure, though. I mean, we're starting a new program for attorneys where attorneys will see people right, you know, where the judge is. And, I mean, you have judges in this county. I mean, we've met them all. They don't want – they want these people to get better. They want these people back in the community. I think a majority of them do anyway. They want them to be functioning members of society. So the other thing I think that came out that was interesting was somebody had suggested a mental health court, just like we have a drug court. I don't know if we need to do that. Maybe we just need more judges. I mean, to get something adjudicated, I mean, I look at family court, for example, and the judges all handle all these cases. Family court takes a long time. Maybe that's what we need. Maybe we need better, maybe we just need more people judging these cases so that we can move the process along faster and we can get these people kind of moving through the system a little quicker instead of making it seem like we drag our feet on it. Last but not least, I think I just, from a straw poll of how this vote's going to go, I mean, I think that at this point I'm going to vote for it, and that's a change for me over the last 6 months. I will say that I think maybe we need to take a vote later on that we may have extra beds at some point. If we have 7, we're not going to have all those beds maybe taken on one particular day. And maybe we need to take a policy that we're not going to take people into this county from other counties. We won't accept board outs. You know, that would be something to talk about. Because then it's what you're saying. We don't want to feed that system of, you know, we're just going to keep jailing people and jailing people. And I understand what you're saying. I do. I get it. And if there was anything we could do to help these people and not do this jail expansion, I'd be on board with you. I just don't see it. And to keep them in this county where we do have a strong commitment to these programs, I just see that as being a better move at this point. So thank you very much for your time, and thank you for all coming and talking about this. I really do appreciate that.
I had myself, then Will. And what I'd like to say is that we have on the floor a resolution to choose this alternative for the renovation of the rec area at the public safety building. We could have voted for this in March. We might have. But some of the folks here said, wait a minute, let's take a longer look at this. Some folks said, as Mike mentioned, maybe we should wait a year. Others said, let's just see what we can do a little quicker than that. We were fortunate to have a county administrator and a director of facilities and a consultant who were willing to say, let's take another look at it. Let's listen to some of the comments made by people such as Will. Will, you were one of the strong advocates that said this could be made better. And I think that was a good thing. I think it's the kind of thing that we do as a legislature, have always done as a legislature since I've served. We take longer, we think about it, and we try to make a decision, and more often than not, our decisions are right. Sometimes we get it wrong, but most often we get it pretty good. I would like to support this. I think it's a better version than the first version was and better than some of the other iterations that came along. I think we need this. You know, when we talk here at the legislature, every once in a while I discern a little spark of brilliance. And Nathan, I want to say what you said tonight, I couldn't agree with you more, what you said about and or, and I like the way you said that. And others have said, made comments and things, but that really tonight impressed me. I would like to see this passed tonight, and then we'll have the other resolution. And I will now stop talking and ask Will Burbank to talk.
Thank you, Mike.
When we started talking about this project, was it a year ago? When was it? I can't remember when this thing started. Joe, help me.
2 years ago.
I remember it seemed like a slam dunk. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was almost unanimous support. Hey, this is a great idea. Board outs, use of little used room. Let's do it. But a lot's changed. And a lot of what changed was the folks that our community rose up and I think saw this, what we perceived as a relatively modest renovation, as somehow symbolic of what is truly a gross misjustice in our society. We do have mass over-incarceration. We do have a justice system that is dependent on the color of your skin and how much money you have. We all know that to be true. It plays out every day in very ugly terms. This project that we have connects, but it is not the totality. And over the course of that year, many people in this body have taken the task to try to understand the complexity of what we're dealing with. And if you have given any study to this, you will realize that it is a very, very complex series of events that results in somebody getting in our jail. The idea that I think some people have that if we build it, they'll fill it, I think is not true. There are dozens of reasons why somebody ends up in jail or doesn't. In the course of doing this, we set up the task force to see what more we could be doing in terms of alternatives to incarceration. That has met multiple times. I've chosen to attend a number of the meetings, and they are some of the most interesting meetings I have gone to because it's a really, really diverse group of people and perspectives struggling with a very real problem. The problem, folk, is that we have done the easy things. We've talked about this all already. You know, we have a bail fund. Maybe it could be bigger, but it's been going for many years. We have a drug court. We have electronic electronic bracelets or whatever we call them. All these are good. Those are easy. The question is, what are the next things we could do, and do we have any guarantee that they'll work? What will they cost? And I think there's been a misperception among people that it's an either-or thing. We either do the jail renovation or we are serious about ATI. And as Nathan very eloquently pointed out, no, it's an and. And I will be supporting this because I truly believe that, A, it's needed now, and, B, there is more that we can do. And ultimately, there will be savings that will allow us the resources to do that more. Now, that's not something I have arrived at easily. And I know there's been the assertion that we don't listen. I know I've had many conversations. I've spent a lot of time listening, thinking, studying, trying to understand this. And one of the things I did not want to do, or one of the things I became aware of, was that conditions in our jail are currently quite overcrowded. They're not great. And we have a lack of space. And I did not want to do something that was going to make conditions for the people who are in our facility worse. And I really, really want to thank Susan Begg for working with us and bringing some things to my attention about early plans that I think really, really had that potential. I think we have evolved to make something better. Jail is still not a good environment for anyone. It may be where you need to be short term, but it's not. It doesn't do what we all want to do in terms of moving people to a better place in their lives. I'm very, very hopeful that we will come up with some good ideas out of the task force. And by the way, I really, really want to encourage those of you who are sincerely concerned about reducing our jail population to start coming to those meetings or going online, the audio is online, sharing ideas. You know, we had a public input session a few weeks ago. that is truly, I think, where we're going to maybe come up with some way of reducing the population. It's not an either or, it's an and. And, you know, we currently have 90-some people up there. If we can get down to 50 or 40 or nothing, that would be great. But we need to approach that over time. And for that reason, I will be supporting this tonight. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Will. Before I go to Kathy, I just want to say when I was talking about the folks that had worked so hard to bring this version forward, I totally neglected to mention Sheriff Lansing and Undersheriff Derek Osborne and Jail Administrator Ray Bunce. And without their help, cooperation, and ideas, bringing this forward to begin with and then being flexible and helping us understand the operations up there better and things, we wouldn't have got to this point either. Kathy.
Thank you, Mike. I agree with Mike and many of the people on the legislature that have stated how important it has been that we have the help of staff and agencies and the corrections officials and the design folks to improve the design of the proposed expansion. You all know that a while back this did look like a done deal, and I remember at one point under privilege of the floor I said, but where have y'all been? And I have to say, to the credit of the activists in this town, what happened was people came out, and I think we have had a really good dialogue about this. I think anybody here with an open mind has learned something. And for myself, I would like to step aside from any polarizing verbiage here and say that reasonable people can disagree about the way to solve a problem. And many of us have arrived at our decisions by a combination of thinking, feeling, by a combination of data and life experiences. And for me, as a person of color, I'm accustomed to being in the minority. I'm accustomed to the pressure that comes from having pretty markedly different life experiences than the majority of my colleagues on the legislature. And I have big shoulders, thick skin. And I can tell you that for me, I agree that there's an and involved. I think that CJATI can exist with funding for children's services. I think that my community, my district, has spoken to me. And, you know, some people are concerned about the added impact on the tax rate. And some folks feel that it's a matter of conscience. Now, those of us on the legislature know a little bit better than that. Many people have spoken about how sometimes people are just in need of some support because they've made bad decisions, bad choices. Sometimes people do terrible things. You know, I have some friends on the CJATI. They spend so much time. They would like to be working with the victims a lot. And our community has an important and, I think, a laudable focus on finding ways to help folks that have been incarcerated to find another way, to find other ways in society. And I think that we in this community run the risk of being seen as not wanting to have a safe community. And I think that sometimes progressives that are running for re-election or that are trying to, you know, get their bona fides really feel that they need to show that they understand that crime is an issue in this community and that we are willing to address it. I'm no different in that way. The difference for me is that I've visited family members in jail. I've seen my nephews and my nieces and other members of my family have an unfair system totally changed their lives. And I'm not sure that there's that many people sitting around this table that have the situation where when their son or daughter or nephew, particularly the sons and the nephews, go out on the street, that there's a fear that they're going to be arrested for loitering or for whatever they're going to be arrested for. Now, with all due respect to folks who have spoken about the need for incarceration and how it has helped them, sometimes people aren't wearing the same kind of target on their backs that people of color are in this community and in this society. We like to say it's not here, you know, we've fixed it here. Come on, y'all. We haven't fixed diversity. Anybody can look at the things that have happened across the country, and we try to say to ourselves, it's not here. We've got the problem here. I want to find a solution for it. You know, the same way when I go to people and I'm advocating for diversity and inclusion, and people say, yeah, I know that's a problem out there, but not here. For years, I've had to deal with people. I'm having emotion right now because guess what? It is here. And you know what it takes for somebody to do that is to stand up. We've had a lot of people that have stood up here in the last few months. And what I want to say here now is, maybe I'm going to be in the minority again tonight, but we get something from this. And what we get out of it, if nothing else, is some of y'all are going to say, you know, this unjust system, even the legislators think they can't change it and they won't vote to do something different. I'm going to run for office. I'm going to support somebody that will run for office and that has the guts, whether it comes from being marginalized in society due to racism or life experiences that have maybe led them to not necessarily believe, A, that you can't change the system, or B, that ultimately you just have to go along because what are you going to do? Have, you know, somebody, you know, impose some fines on you. Listen, I've seen this legislature. When it seemed like our taxes were too high, we had no problem defying the state. We had no problem before saying that we would not expand the jail. It was more, what was the word someone used over there? It was less cumbersome at that time for the majority to come out against a jail expansion. I recognize that this is tough for a lot of people. I just want to say that I think I am being part of the solution. You know, the fact that sometimes I'm willing to dig in my heels and not compromise, some people see that as being, an ideologue. That's the word. And I want to say, yeah, maybe that's true. You know, I'm from Texas, and Jim Hightower isn't the first person that said it, but he said that there's nothing in the middle of the road but yellow stripes and dead armadillos. I tell you, sometimes you need people to stand up and say their truth and what they've seen. And if they are in the minority, and it's not some irony that two people of color, at least on this legislature, their lives experiences and their education and their analyzing of the data and their feelings and their thoughts have led them to conclude that supporting this resolution is not something they, in good conscience, can do, although I'm not speaking for anyone but myself here, just an observation. I want to say that on this, I'm willing to be seen as not statesmanlike or an ideologue, because that's why I ran for office, was to change the federal government, to change the state government, to change the city government, and to change the county government. And I'm willing to be what I think here is on the right side of history, and I'm voting against this. I just want to say to my colleagues on the legislature, I'd like to say that for me, and this is just my observation, that there is an and with this, and for me, the racism and poverty is what I see that takes place as a result of continuing to collude with this system and with saying, no, you know, we've thought of everything, we're doing everything as best as we can, we just have to build on. ATI and CJI and the folks in the corrections facility are all doing the very best they can in a broken system. Who's going to fix that system? It has to be you and it has to be us. And so that's why I'm respectfully voting no. And I had hoped in the month's discussion that we could change some more minds. And I think that maybe in the long run, as I say, this vote is going to be on the right side of history. And I'd like to think that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years from now, everybody will be talking about the history and how they really didn't want to do it. And to me, I'll see that as a victory.
Are we ready to vote? I guess not. Dooley? Then after Dooley, let's vote.
I made a hard decision this year to give up a place on my beloved Facilities and Infrastructure Committee and asked to be on Public Safety Committee for the first time in my 20 years here, because I knew what the decisions were coming that would be we'd be facing, and I wanted to understand them as thoroughly as I could. I think I have come to understand them quite well. And part of that has to do with members of the public like Jamie Hendricks, who brought us many useful comments during these last few months. And I was saddened tonight to hear her sound discouraged and frustrated with us. She has been heard, listened to, and even if my vote doesn't go the way she thinks it should tonight. I wanted to thank someone I hadn't heard before until recently, Susie Kosak, who spoke about mentoring in detail, which I found very useful also. I did read her email. I went to the website, Center for Community Alternatives, and was disappointed to see that everything that I could find on their website was generalities and no specific suggestions. But I'm very glad we have an ATI task force that is going to come up with those things. And I would like us not to be waiting to invest in any additional ATI efforts until we have savings from this particular vote tonight. We should go forward with something when it makes sense to us. And I would suggest that many of the people who are here passionately wanting us to be more attuned to alternatives and reaching out to people who need help and figuring out how to get them that way and wire the lights.
It's okay with Will.
They should probably speak to us about our budget vote, and we'll be deciding whether to try to meet a tax cap tonight. And if we meet a tax cap tonight, and in the future this year, we're not going to be able to add on things that we need. So these our different votes are not unrelated. Anyway, the main reason that I decided I wanted to support this particular structure on the blacktop is that I think that people who are incarcerated for reasons that you've heard, judges decide what they're going to serve. Police people decide who should be arrested. We don't have anything to do with that. But once they're in our jail, they should be treated at least as well as people who are on probation, who are going to day reporting, who get other programs to help them. And to do that, they have to be in our county. And so adding the beds made sense to me. Not to save money, but to give services to people who wind up in our jail for whatever reason. And I held out and support this option B for the tangible and intangible benefits that outdoor space can give to people who are indoors most of the day. So I'm happy to support this resolution and hope that we will get a path-breaking report from the ATI task force that we will have other things that we can do right away.
I'd like to vote, but Martha's got her hand up, and I guess Carol wants to speak again. I'm sorry, and Brian? Well, Brian wants to speak again. Martha, you haven't spoken yet on this, on the main motion. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mike. And I want to thank the members of the community who've taken this issue so seriously, and you know, as has been said, when this idea was first presented, we kind of went, wow, of course, well, let's go. The fact that the community took an interest in this and made us stop and look at what we were doing and think about it and think about it again and set up the task force, you have all added tremendous value to this process. And I agree with Dooley that I hope we can, I assume the task force will be reporting out before, well, perhaps before the budget, you know, our budget negotiations in the fall, so that we can, if there are concrete ideas that require funding, those can go in the mix of things that we look at, even before we're realizing savings from the new beds. So I thank the community for your thoughtfulness, for your study, and for your compassion. I was on the legislature when we, by 8-7, resisted the state's demand that we build 134 beds. Now, that wasn't adding 6-7 beds. That was adding, that would have been adding 35 or 40 beds. That would have been a massive increase. At that type of increase, I do believe can have a stimulative effect on incarceration. I don't believe 7 beds makes that kind of difference. I believe this is a project that will create a more humane situation for the prisoners who are there, and even if we can, with new measures, bring the population way down, well, this would allow us to reduce the double bunking that we're depending on now. That's not a good situation. It's not, we're not supposed to be double bunking, but it's what the state has let us do to avoid sending even more people to Tioga and Chemung, et cetera. So I look forward to us being able to consider new programs, new enhancements to existing programs, to things that come out of the task force, and that's important for us to do. But I'm also thinking about the breakfast tomorrow morning. The Advocacy Center is having its annual fundraising breakfast. The Advocacy Center is one of those key services that provides help for victims, because there are people there in this community who hurt other people. And those victims of the advocacy that the Advocacy Center serves, they need to know that they are safe. And sometimes that means that some people have to go to jail. Now, we hope they go as quickly as possible into treatment. We hope we can treat them while they're in our jail. We hope we can reinitiate our reentry program, for example, so that immediately when somebody goes in, we start planning for their rehabilitation, for their exit, to be a productive citizen again. These are complicated decisions. I'm very proud of the vote I cast 10 or whatever years ago to keep us from building what would have been at minimum a $20 million jail, and that's even beyond the staffing that would have been added. Very proud of that vote 10 years ago, and I think this is a vote that we need to take tonight, and I'm comfortable with the decision to support the project.
Second time up, please be short and crisp. Carol?
Well, this is on the main motion. The other was about my amendments. I'm going to agonize about this vote until the second we take it. We later tonight we're going to vote on the budget, and given the realities that have been faced in front of us, put in front of us by the governor, what we do this year on the budget is going to determine something about our budget probably for the next 3 years. And I don't see where money is going to come from for ATI programs unless we make some commitment now that it's at least it's our intention to go in that direction with the savings. And I'm agonizing, and I don't want any applause because I wouldn't consider it a victory to gain a vote to send even one additional person an hour away from family and services. I don't consider that a victory. We're faced with terrible choices here. But absent any wording to put the "and" in jail expansion and ATI, I don't know that if I can support this.
Brian?
Well, we almost don't need to take a vote because everybody's pretty much voiced their opinion. No. But when we do, the only thing I was asking for was a roll call vote.
You may have that. Are we ready to vote?
Yes.
We'll have a roll call on it, please.
Ms. Robertson?
Just to be clear, this is as adopted by committee.
This is on the resolution as adopted by committee. It's resolution J, designating the design of an outdoor recreational structure at the Tompkins County Jail being constructed in conjunction with interior renovations that add 7 beds to the capacity of the jail.
Yes.
Mr. Robison?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
11 ayes, 3 noes.
The resolution passes. Brian, could you move your next resolution, please?
Sure. now we need to pay for it. Resolution K, ID 4711, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $910,000, parentheses $900,000, serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the costs of a capital improvement project at the Public Safety Building, and I so move.
Brian, was there an amendment to reduce the $900,000 in parentheses in there? Kathy?
That's to be deleted in the brackets, the $900,000 in the title.
Say that again.
Kathy, would you read it the way it's supposed to be, please?
A bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $910,000 serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of a capital improvement project at the Public Safety Building.
Okay, I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion? I think we've pretty much discussed the issues here. Carol?
Well, I don't want to do this at this point, but if we're going to do it, I sure don't want us to take the money out of operating funds to do it. So I will support this.
Other discussion? Are we ready to... Dooley?
Did you find out whether the addition of the words and the site were acceptable?
They are.
Do you know what I'm talking about, Mike? No.
Who are you asking?
I asked Joe. I had turned in. I was concerned about the wording of the bond resolution, the standard wording, because the word addition in connection with the jail building sounds like maybe we are breaking the walls. So I wondered if we could describe it as these actions are in connection with both the building and the site. And I wanted to add the words and the site. And I had thought that that was in everybody's folder, but I'm not sure it is.
Brian, would that be friendly?
Where are you talking about?
It's in the second whereas, Brian.
10.
All right, say it again, please.
Renovations, reconstruction, and additions to the public safety building and its site.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right with the seconder, Peter?
I guess so. Is that okay?
We've checked with bond counsel.
Yeah, I was going to say bond counsel didn't have a problem. Okay.
Are we ready to vote? This does require a roll call.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Robison?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
You know, in spite of what I just said, it's a no.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
11 ayes, 3 noes.
The bond resolution is adopted. We'll now take a 10-minute break. We'll raise the screens while we're doing that and be back here at by 10 of us.
Nice.
I want to ask the opinion of the group. Shall we proceed with the agenda from where we left off, or do you want me to move the resolutions with respect to the next year's budget forward at this point?
What happened?
We're all going to be here, right? Oh, but maybe for the Ithaca Journal. We have. Are you going to write about the budget tonight, Andy? Huh?
Well, let's move budget committee up. Let's just do that.
Okay.
Brian?
Did you want me to finish my report, or are you going to go back?
I'll come back to you.
Okay.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you for moving it, Michael. Let me go right to it is Resolution G, and it's the establishment of the 2015 County Financial Goal and editorializing. It's 2.36% for Tompkins County, and I would move that.
Seconded by Brian Robison. Discussion.
No.
Julie Kiefer.
I want to ask the county administrator about line 5. It says, whereas as of April 29th, the county administrator estimates maintenance of effort budget. I was under the impression that the county administrator did that back in March, actually came up with that number. And it hasn't changed, but I thought that as early as it was first reported to us is the date that it should be identified as.
Well, okay. I mean, we made it effective essentially the first time that we presented it to the legislature, the resolution for the legislature, and the numbers were valid as of that date. We have not done any subsequent adjustments of the estimate.
I guess I thought you had done it March 31st.
We did do it March 31st. Again, I think this date coincides with when we first brought the resolution to the legislature. So we tied it to that date, saying as of that date, it's a valid estimate of maintenance of effort.
Jim?
Joe, correct me. It coincides with the meeting at TCAT, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, got ready to vote on this one?
Which resolution is that, G?
This is G. It's
the establishment of the county financial goal.
For 2015. Julie?
I would just like to make it clear that I do not believe it's acceptable at this point for our county administrator to have changed our capital capital program increase down to 0.5% from 0.75%. I would not be supporting this anyway, but I would like that noted in the record.
Martha?
I'm going to be voting against this because I am hopeful that I would really rather we aimed lower. So I think this is too high.
Ready to vote? Peter?
What did Dooley say? I missed it. I didn't understand it. So I'd like to know before I vote.
Peter, you're a classic.
Dooley, do you want to? I think what Dooley said was that she was unhappy because of the reduction in the goal for the capital budget from 0.75% on the levy to 0.5% on the levy.
Because that is not a decision that the legislature has made.
Okay.
She wanted to censure the county administrator.
Censure.
Yes, and I should have said I would like the record to show my reasoning for my no vote. Thanks, Kathy.
Brian?
To me, anyway, this entire thing is a recommendation from the county administration. So whether it's the percentage increase or, a reduction in the capital improvements allotment. It's all just a recommendation. I mean, that's what we have him for, is to recommend to us, I think.
Kathy, then Jim.
No. Thank you. I'm not sure that I agree with that technically because
we sort of have to adhere to what's presented if we don't come up with something, and at least that's my understanding. Anyway, as far as the goal goes, I can tell you, 2 weeks ago, you know, I would have said I wanted it to come in lower. Since we just made this vote on the jail expansion, and since I'm aware of so much going on with in the community with regard to funding for children being taken away by the state and the federal government, all kinds of things that y'all know about. Unfortunately, when it comes to the budget, we're not able to do ands. We have to do ors. And so I'm willing to vote for a higher goal, understanding that we are going to do our utmost to rein this in. However, the fact is there are some places where very worthy programs and agencies are, in essence, going to be pitted against each other. And that's why I'm voting for a higher goal than I would have voted for, say, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Did I make it plain that I'm supporting the goal? Okay.
Jim Dennis.
Let me just reiterate one more time. A process that was set up long before I came here about the legislature having the county administrator prepare their projection of what the budget should be for the ensuing year and recommending a target levy. And that's what we would be doing, is supporting what the county administrator has demonstrated to us on April 29th, and it allows the administrator to then deal with the department heads, knowing full well what we have supported at whatever date that happens to be, hopefully June 3rd, 2014.
Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 14. The resolution is agreed to.
Resolution 8H, establishment of guidelines and fiscal targets for all county budgeting units for the preparation of the 2015 budget, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion?
Let me just find it, okay? I know it's here. I just got my pages messed up. Yeah, I know, but...
Packet page 20?
Yep. There, I got it.
Kathy, did you want to speak? Did you want to speak? Or are you just...
Sure,
looking?
I'll speak.
Well, no, you don't have to. I just...
I will, since I've been called on. I believe in goals, even though they're hard to adhere to sometimes. I think that the county departments and agencies are accustomed to us showing them what we're thinking. And I think that establishing these guidelines and fiscal targets will allow the departments to plan ahead. I'd like to say now and ahead of time for the resolution that's going to be coming, I think, that it's my belief that a maintenance of effort budget is probably insufficient, especially given our recent vote and the needs of, as I've said before, children and the poor. So although I agree with the targets, I believe that we'll have to do more.
Martha?
Yes, as of with G, I'd like the I'm going to be voting no. I'd like the record to show it's because I would like the goals to be lower.
Carol?
Yeah, I think there's going to be some tough choices to make, and I don't believe in across-the-board cuts. I believe that the administrator ought to have the freedom to work with department heads and decide whether one versus another just can't handle the low amount that we've set, which won't even achieve maintenance of effort. So I would tend to give him more leeway. So So I will vote no on this.
Jim, then Peter.
Frankly, I will vote yes, and it's got nothing to do with whether I think this is the right number or not. This is we're deep into the budget season. People have been working with this number, and it makes absolutely no sense, it seems to me, at this point, to change that number.
Jim?
Are you okay? I agree with Peter. It is part of the process. Again, you are following the process that was set up years ago. This is the number that the county administrator came with, and you, by supporting this, you are supporting what you've put in place and the way it will proceed through the budget process. And let me just say, I recognize that as we move in September and October, that there will be many tough choices, and there will be many votes, and there will be a lot of a lot of discussion about all of the tough choices people have talked about here, and I'm fully aware of where the budget could go after in September and October.
Can we vote? Dooley?
If I understand correctly, the department heads and division heads have already been given this instruction by the county administrator. Is that right?
Joe?
Yes, with the caveat that if the legislature chose a different goal, that we would revise their target
right.
after that.
And I don't think, unlike Peter, I don't think that that would have been a big burden for them to be given an easier one to work with. So I'm going to be consistent with the previous vote, and I will be voting against this.
On Resolution H, all those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. All those opposed? One, two, three, four, five. The resolution is agreed to.
Thank you. Resolution I, adoption of a local law. Number C of 2014, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2015. I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley Kiefer.
One comment, Mike. What we are doing is, in a sense, protecting ourselves. It's a new world we're in with Governor Cuomo's tax cap proposal reduction, whatever he's calling it these days. But this whole process has changed somewhat. If we even think we are going to go over the cap, we need to pass this now, and then I believe again, possibly at the end of the process, if we go over the cap. Is that?
I don't think so. I think if you pass this now and you go over the cap, you're fine.
Okay.
If you choose, if we're able to bring it in under the cap and we want to qualify homeowners for the rebate check, we have to repeal
it. Right,
this.
We have to delete this. Okay. That's. I knew there was potential for two votes somewhere, but there you go.
Yeah.
Again, I'm hoping people support this.
May I ask the county attorney to prep us and make us remember when the last point we would have to act on that, if there should be a repeal, when we would have to act by, and you can just later on in the year make sure we don't forget. Peter Stein.
I will vote against this on principle, as I haven't had in previous years. I think that we should attempt to comply with the tax cap, even though I am a fierce opponent of it. I believe we should try to do that because I believe at least the people I've spoken to are my constituents are generally in favor of it. I think I would have voted, in previous years, I would have voted to override at a later time, but I think we owe the people that believe in this that we have tried to stay within the tax cap and found we could not. So it's just a matter in my mind of do we do it early or do we do it late? Given the complicated situation we're in this year, where if we decide not to do it at that point, and then we have to repeal this, I see no really good argument for doing it at this point. So I will vote no.
Kathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Mr. Stein on one thing, and that is that people do like the idea of a tax cap. The problem is, as we know, the idea of the tax cap and the reality of what it means is contradictory. The fact is, the amount that people might get back bears no relationship to reality because of the increased costs that we would have to bear dismantling so many of the things that we already know have a huge return on investment would be far more than a check for however many dollars. And I understand from talking to some of my constituents that that check would come in handy. But the fact is they would pay for it, and it's a matter of paying for it a lot and getting a check so that you can say, look, I got a check, or having a principled approach to it that ends up doing something that you all know I love to do, and that is defying a false premise that the governor has created here with this tax cap or whatever it's being called these days. So I'm going to support this local law overriding the tax cap.
Are ready to vote? Let's do a roll call.
Ms. Robertson?
No.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
11 ayes, 3 noes.
The local law is adopted.
Thank you for those votes. I believe it clears the way for the county administrator to do what he has already begun, but it gives him the support of the legislature in this, and I wish you well, Joe. See you in September, as they say.
Okay, it's 10 minutes after 8. We're going back to the top of the agenda where we left off. And we are up to privilege of the floor by municipal officials. I'm not seeing any out there. Then we have privilege of the floor for legislators. Considering the hour, I hope folks will be very short. And who's up? Kathy, then Will.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm only 5'1", so I've got to be short anyway. Ha, ha, ha. All right. Listen, I don't know about y'all, but I got a flyer in the mail, one of these from this mega auto firm, and they send it with this little key. Anybody get those?
Yeah.
Anybody? Okay, I got that, and, you know, I'm a tinkerer, but I also heard about it on my listserv where people said, isn't this ridiculous, because a lot of people just throw them in the recycling. And these have batteries in them. And the batteries, yeah, they have little LR14s or watch batteries that go in timers and stuff.
Thank you. Use layman's language.
Yeah, well, those little tiny ones, you'll recognize them if you're a tinker and you open it up. Here's the thing, though. I know that we're all supposed to take off anything that goes into the recycling, and I know that everyone sitting around this table does, but I bet you there's 3 or 4 people out there in the public that don't, and maybe there's more. So the fact is, a lot of this stuff goes directly into the landfill. And here it is coming from these mega auto folks that don't even live in this county. Some folks suggested on the listserv, and I thought this would be a great thing for TCOG or the Water Resources Council, that we try and find a way to communicate with them, because apparently consumers saying to them, please don't do this because it's bad for the environment, has had no effect whatsoever, because apparently even if they get 1 out of 100 and sell a car with it or get somebody to come in. Anyway, so I'd like to bring this to the attention of the legislature and ask for anyone who's interested in helping me figure out what's the best venue to try and change this, please come talk to me or just tell me what you think would work. Thank you.
Will?
Thank you, Mike.
Ithaca Festival happened. It was a great weekend. I hope everybody got down. And we had a new part of that festival on the Thursday parade. Our county did participate and had a contingent in the parade. And I want to express great thanks to Marcia for helping pull us together, for Joe putting down his budget book and all of other worries and getting out there and marching down. We have folks from the county clerk. We had folks from COFA and a whole separate contingent from solid waste. So it was exciting to have us. So I discovered some rhythm within our ranks. And Highway, thank you. How could I forget? Jeff was there with the truck and everything. It was a small group. I hope that if we do this again, we'll try. Oh, and Dan was out front, but on stilts for some reason. I don't know. I would hope in our some 700 employees and that we might think another year about doing more to express the incredible diversity that is within our own operations and our own ranks. And that the parade is a wonderful way to do that. But I want to once again thank everybody who came out and helped.
Anyone else? Brian?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out real quick that this week happens to be the last week that Judge Judy Rossiter will be on the bench before she retires. You want to talk about somebody that's been a pioneer in terms of ATIs and just plain making every effort to keep folks out of jail. In my former life, I did not understand that as anywhere near as well as I do now. She really has, along with Judge Rowley, has been a real pioneer and just a fun person, very animated, somebody that my wife and I have actually grown to be good personal friends with, and I think she's going to be missed here. She came along at the right time for the city of Ithaca, and I wish her well in her retirement. I know where to find her. We've been to her place down there. But maybe if you run into her or can give her a call or something this week, that'd be great.
Martha?
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Brian, for remembering that. Yeah, Judge Rosser has been, you know, real pillar of the community.
And she's a Democrat, too, and I supported her right through.
Shocking. I just weather a lot of parades this season and Dryden Dairy Days. I bet Mike was going to steal your thunder. Since Frank is not sitting here, I have to say, steal your thunder. I guess it's next Saturday, the 14th. The 14th. Is the county doing anything?
We have a county contingent. So.
County will have a contingent on Dryden Dairy Days, June 14th. And Juneteenth, listen, is you know, there's a lot going on this month. So, and as I mentioned before, tomorrow morning is the Advocacy Center breakfast.
Leslie.
Oh, thank you. And I'll be at the breakfast tomorrow morning. Brian, thanks. Judge Judy's retirement party is this Saturday, the 7th, 5:00 to 8:30 at Stewart Park. The entire community is invited, and it is really wonderful to celebrate and honor her. I also no, it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise. No, she is well aware it's not a surprise. Don't bring any presents, she said.
Yeah.
And I know on the 6th is the surprise, so I wouldn't mention that one. But at any rate, she has done amazingly well, just personally, you know, we were involved, or I was involved a little bit in trying to help support folks through the whole restorative justice process and through alternatives to incarceration. And she would make a point of calling my home when I was helping to care for an adult or be a mentor to an adult to keep her out of the jail system, Judge Judy, every Sunday morning, or the call this woman who wanted to be reminded to go to church. And it was the most personal thing I'd ever seen someone do, and she really took it seriously just to help her to get through and to stay on the right path. So she's done some amazing work as a judge. Of course, I'm sure there are people on the other side who would not say that, because she's also adjudicated fairly and in accordance with the law, and many people don't like that. When we are done with the Dryden Dairy Days, come on down to 301 West Court Street, the 300 block of West Court Street, because it is the annual GIAC festival, and the county has been represented at this festival well over, you know, the last couple of years, and we're looking forward to you being there this year. Our theme this year is Mardi Gras style, so put your beads on, because we will not be throwing, and come get ready to stroll and bounce Mardi Gras style with us. The following week, the 21st, is the annual Juneteenth celebration at the Southside Community Center, Cleveland Avenue, Plain Street. And, of course, everyone is invited to attend. Next year, thank you, Will, for recognizing the folks who were there. I just wanted to also mention the Human Rights Commission having a contingent.
Yes.
At the
right up front, yes.
And well photographed too, and very colorful at the Ithaca Festival Parade. And if any one of you is interested in joining the county band, because I'm going to try to put together the band, because the impromptu band, we're not doing well holding the beat for the marchers. So if you're interested, come see me. We're going to put the house band together. But thanks, everyone, for participating and being there and showing the diversity of programs within our county, what we have to offer. Thank you.
Jim, and then Dooley.
Two things. This Thursday evening is a 25-year dinner honoring employees who have been with us for 25 years. And I hope that some people have signed up to go to that. It's my understanding there are over 200 people who are going to be attending. And hopefully it's a dry day for that. Second item, I'm somewhat of a sports fan, and all things being equal, I'm a front runner, and I'm currently supporting the Los Angeles Kings to win the Stanley Cup because of Captain Dustin Brown, who is an Ithaca native. And please just read the newspaper or follow all of you big-time hockey fans. It should be a fun thing. He's a really exciting player. His team is great, and it would be cool if he could bring the trophy back to Ithaca in the summertime again.
Dooley?
I thought you were going to talk about the Belmont. You fooled me.
No.
So I wanted to...
That's too easy.
I wanted to let everyone know that the Move to Amend group, Tompkins County or Ithaca chapter, is part of the nationwide movement still working hard to get a constitutional amendment about corporate personhood. And there are 16 states that have taken that position. There are a lot of cities and counties and towns who've voted on this, but 16 states have made it clear that they would vote to support a constitutional amendment, and there should be a constitutional convention for that. And Move to Amend is hoping New York State will be the 17th state. There are a few legislators shy of having a majority in both houses, and today there was a local press conference to try to let Senator O'Mara know that we really think that he should support this effort. Barbara Lifton has signed on, and Jim Seward refuses to even consider it. So if anyone has any sway with either O'Mara or Seward, we could use it. That's all.
Okay, ready to move on, folks? Thank you. My report, I told you last time that I was invited to meet with the search committee along, not just me, but many community leaders, probably eight or nine of us, the search committee for the president who will be selected to lead Cornell University after David Skorton retires. And that meeting took place, and I did brief everybody by email about what happened. So I'll just be very brief so the folks at home know that it was a very cordial meeting. We met with four trustees on the search committee from Cornell University, led by the chair of that search committee, Jan Rock-Zubro. We learned about how the search process had come to that point, starting in March, how it was proceeding. And she and they were very interested in hearing comments from the locals about what we felt the qualities of the next president of the university should be. Mostly we said we wanted to see things like David Skorton had started continued. That's the dialogue with the community, being out there among us, working with our institutions, encouraging students to work in the not-for-profits and other things that have helped over the last few years, and also the fact that Cornell has economically helped us in some of the projects that we have had, such as transportation and housing, and we wanted to see that continued. We were told that the process to choose the next president will take about 9 months, and that after commencement weekend, and that's why the full Board of Trustees was in Ithaca for commencement, after that it will be a closed search. It will be private. And they will come forward with just one candidate to their full board to select. Also, I wanted to mention that I had the privilege of going to our Sustainability Center in Tompkins County for the Solar Tompkins kickoff. It was very interesting, very well attended by folks from the who were interested in solar activities, some of the contractors who've been selected by that not-for-profit group to do work in our county, try to add more solar panels to residences. At least two contractors, they're hoping up to 170 houses each. We had representatives from the city, town of Caroline, Don Barber spoke. It was a nice thing. People from our Environmental Management Council were there, and it's going to help us toward our goal of reaching 80% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2050. And I mentioned that will be my 100th birthday, and I thought that would be a nice birthday present. Let's move on to reports. Oh, I'm sorry. I had one appointment. To the Workforce Investment Board, Kenneth C. Smith from the New York State Department of Labor. He's their representative. Term expires June 30th, 2017. Reports from the County Administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. Very, very short report tonight. First, thank you for the work that you did on the jail project and in setting the targets. I mean, both the endurance shown and the creativity shown throughout the jail project was really remarkable. With respect to the budget, what you did is really important to that process. We've got a really good system that establishes targets that are supported by the legislature up front, and that really does represent an important starting point in our process. And I think you know that at least one other county is trying to emulate that example. Cortland is trying to build this their system, so it's taking root in other places as well. Very quick updates on a couple of personnel things. With respect to the airport manager position, we're now entering the phase of interviewing finalists for that position. So it's our expectation that by the latter part of June, we will have identified a candidate for that position. That's obviously a very important position So the search committee is involved in that. Personnel, we're going to have a kickoff organizational meeting tomorrow. That will really begin the process in earnest. Applications are being accepted through June. So there's a long posting period. We're advertising across the country for the position. It's our goal to have something done with that position by late July, perhaps early August. You know how critical that position is and how important that search is. So we'll kick off tomorrow. Kind of at another tier, the 911 center is a part of the budget that you approved last year. There was a position added. We called it then Quality Assurance and Training. It came to be known as Professional Development Coordinator. You may recall that a resolution was passed a little while ago to enact that. That process is going very well also. The same search committee basically that was involved in the search for the dispatch center director was reconvened to look at applicants for this job. I heard a very good report today about the progress of that group. So that's another important position that is going to strengthen the dispatch center and the 911 operations. The last thing on my short list, Charter Review Committee, I believe, is tomorrow.
Correct.
And I think the centerpiece item on that agenda is to look at public works departments and whether there should be a structural change in those public works departments. Currently, those divisions, facilities, highways, airport, and solid waste, are divisions of the public works department. It's headed by a commissioner. Tomorrow, the committee will be looking at whether we should look at those divisions more like independent departments as opposed to divisions of a public works department. So if you have an interest in that topic, that will be tomorrow's agenda item on charter reform. And that's my report.
Questions? Carol, then Martha.
Yeah, I'm just curious if during the Ithaca Festival, as I do every year, I park over on Clinton Street because it's farther away, and I walk through the parking lot of what's now the Hotel Ithaca. And every year on the same weekend, when it's hard to get into town, the statewide Association of Superintendents of Public Works have their annual conference here. I think we lured them here. I personally welcomed, I don't know, 15 of them just as I walked across the parking lot with, you know, each with big trucks from towns that I never heard of. And I just am curious as to whether we had anybody there.
Don't know if Jeff attended that or not. I don't know whether those are town highway superintendents or county highway superintendents.
Public Works.
Public Works. Yeah, I'll have to check with Jeff.
Arthur?
Thanks, Mike. A comment and then a question, Joe, on the jail project. Arell, of course, worked hard on this, and the sheriff and his staff, but you put in an amazing amount of work, and you provided under serious fire a lot of unbelievable information. I mean, you know, in terms of supporting a policy decision, you gave us more than we've ever had before on this whole issue, and maybe on any issue. I mean, this was what we have now is a real set of documents that are really going to help us go forward and, you know, maybe look at setting a baseline and looking at if we make changes, do we have something to compare it to? Yeah, well, now we do. And I really, really appreciate the hours and hours you put into creating a real quality sort of library for us.
Thank you.
And the question is, if Charter Review changes those divisions to departments, does that imply or require a reclassification? Does that change the job titles? And
I don't think so, no. And that's really not a part of the presentation. It's my belief is that they will remain where they are, although that's really a personnel discussion. Mm-hmm. It's really whether the Commissioner of Public Works is still a pertinent title, whether we should keep it there, if only as a marker for the future or not. And that's the conversation we'll have.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Can we go to Jonathan Wood, County Attorney?
I have no report.
Can we go to Rick Snyder, the County Director of Finance. Rick, as he told us last time, has gone down to see one of his children graduate.
And one got married and one, I think, graduated.
Got married, right. Too, so that's a twofer. And Joe, is there anything that you need to report from his department?
No.
Okay, thank you. Resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. Peter Stein.
I'd like to withdraw L, Resolution L, from Health and Human Services.
Okay. Do you want to say anything about that?
Yes, this was a resolution that looked good to us or to some of us a couple of weeks ago. But we've learned more that it's more complicated than we thought, and we intend to work on that some more and bring something back to the committee, hopefully at its next meeting, to the legislature at its next meeting.
Thank you. Will?
And I would like to add, because keeping things whole, we've lost one, I would like to add Resolution M, which would be urging the New York State Legislature to reject Senate Bill 6870, Assembly 8203A, which has been dubbed the Just and Open Business Subsidies Act of 2014.
Seconded by Jim Dennis. All those in favor of adding this to the agenda, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I think that's unanimous.
Thank you.
Consent agenda. I'll read the resolutions. If you want them talked about, just say, and we'll come back to them. And out of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution A, 4853, authorize an amendment to 2013 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant. Resolution B, ID 4852, authorizing 2014 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit and Tompkins County. Resolution C, ID 4851, authorizing 2014 Federal Transit Administration Section 5339 grant application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit, TCAT. Out of the Government Operations Committee, Resolution D, ID 4863, establishing standard work days for elected and appointed officials of Tompkins County. Resolution E, ID 4833, authorizing a consultant agreement with CNS Engineers, Inc. for design and bidding services in connection with terminal expansion, security improvements, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution F, to approve, or that's ID 4816, to approve the 2014 amendment to Municipal Cooperative Agreement for the Greater Tompkins County Municipal Health and that's off.
I'm sorry.
And that's all of them. Can I have a motion on the consent agenda? Kathy Luz Herrera, is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson. Those in favor of the consent agenda, raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I believe that's unanimous. Let's go to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Carol Chalk, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. Somebody had asked me a question. I know you approved it on the consent agenda, but somebody asked me a question about what the other category was on the income that would be applied towards one of the transportation grants, and I did find out the answer from Dwight Mangle, which was money from Cooperative Extension. I'm going to start with what we started with, which is when our next meeting times will be, because they have fluctuated some. June 18th, we will be, it's a Wednesday, the third Wednesday, we'll be meeting from 12:30 to 3, as we will also be doing on July 16th. We had a very interesting report from the city attorney, the Ithaca city attorney, Barry Levine, who talked to us about the proposal for the city stormwater fee. Apparently, stormwater management costs the city almost $1 million of their budget annually. This is work for stuff like runoff drains, stream corridors, dealing with ice jams, dredging, environmental aspects of stormwater. And because of our geography here, you know, the water all runs downhill. So the city carries a pretty big burden. Most of us, anybody who came here tonight, traveled through the city of Ithaca. And so they are looking at other ways to cover some of that expense in addition to the tax levy. They are looking for ways to improve incentives for reducing that stormwater runoff so that if your property reduces the amount of non-porous surface in your parking lots, your buildings with a rooftop that will help ease the runoff problem, then you won't have to pay as big a fee as if you are contributing. So the fees would be based on what you contribute to the problem and in proportion to the property's expected runoff. Tax-exempt entities such as ourselves, the county, would be included in this. So he came to tell us about it. And it would be a dedicated funding stream for the maintenance. So we had an interesting discussion about it, and I can tell you more details if you'd like. I will point out that with a fee rather than a tax, the tax cap that the governor is imposing would not be included, so that helps ease their burden in that regard as well. What else can I tell you? We had a very interesting report from Karen Baer. Some of you, I think, on GEO heard this presentation or will hear it on their Fair Housing Choice Project. She's trying to identify the barriers to fair housing choice in our county. And barriers include things that aren't necessarily obvious, in addition to overt gender, racial, or other kinds of discrimination. Barriers might include other systemic issues, such as public transportation, where it is or isn't, climate in the community related to fair housing. And eventually they'll be developing strategies. But for now, what they're going to be doing is a survey and some testing and analyzing of data and writing up of their results. And then we had another interesting report from the Cornell University, Dan Roth, from the Cornell University Climate Action Office, on the Cornell University Climate Action Plan. He said that Cornell has already spent $35 million to date on energy conservation, and they intend to increase this figure to $50 million over a five-year period. They've added climate change minor on the educational side and classes on sustainability, and they update this plan every 2 years. So they've received NYSERDA money. You know, they've put in the 2-megawatt solar farm, they've put in some things like they've bought 6 electric vehicles and have installed 2 electric charging stations. If anybody hasn't seen those up at the hospital, you can just drive right in and charge your vehicle. And I'm not sure where they're located on the campus, but you can go
right
and do that there. Where?
Right outside the emergency department.
Martha Van Parking Garage.
Okay. So there are other things. One interesting thing that he talked about was they've instituted this sort of building competition, a competition for who can reduce their energy use the most on campus. So, what, you know, one building against another. So they made it kind of fun to think for buildings, whole occupants of buildings, to think about what else they can do. And there's been a real range of measures that people have taken. Let me see if I've left anything. I don't think I've left anything out. You'll be hearing more about the energy roadmap from our planning department. They had 6 responses to the RFP, and I haven't heard what the results were.
Carol, I had a question on the stormwater presentation. Was it discussed how big a financial hit that would be on Tompkins County?
They prepared estimates.
He didn't bring the estimate for us, so I've asked Kevin Sutherland if he could pass that over to us. We have an idea of how much it will cost.
Yeah, so I think if indeed they adopt this, if indeed it is something they can adopt legally, then I think we may have to talk about that at our budget sessions, because that's one more money that's going to go out of Tompkins County and less money to do things like ATI and other things.
Just clarify what you mean by go out of Tompkins County?
Well, out of our Tompkins County budget.
Oh, out of the county budget. Okay. But
no, I didn't mean
the repairs to the city stormwater are being done in Tompkins County. So, I understand where
you misunderstood me. I was simply saying the money would come out of our Tompkins County budget.
Okay.
And that means that would be less money. That's a bigger expense that we didn't have last year. And we'd have to, depending on how large that is, we have a lot of buildings with a lot of impervious area. I'm worried that this could be very expensive.
Yeah. One way that we could reduce that, we have talked in the past about looking again at where the prices have gone for porous asphalt, for things like parking lots. It doesn't work as well on roads yet, as far as I know, although there may be new developments out there. But for things like parking lots that aren't lots, it may be the kind of thing that would help reduce our costs.
Martha?
Yeah, I need to be convinced that this is a legitimate idea. That most of the city is built. We're not going to dig up our parking lots and put permeable asphalt in. It's not just a layer. It's, there's a whole system underneath. I've talked to Herb Engman about the town's sidewalks, and those are structures that are 6 feet down that change, the water flow. We pay sewage fees for water treatment, and this is for stormwater runoff. I'm unclear as to where this idea comes from, and not sure what the justification is, and whether any other municipality does this.
This came out of a task force that continues to meet, we're all free to go in and weigh in.
What's the task force?
There was a task force on storm water.
They mentioned Raleigh Durham.
Stormwater Management User Fee Task Force.
Mentioned what?
They mentioned Raleigh Durham does this. It's there is precedent behind it. They just mentioned Raleigh just as an example of a larger city that does this.
Raleigh Durham.
Let's see. We had Kathy and then Jim.
Right.
Thank you. Oh, go ahead, Dooley.
Did I miss Dooley?
It's been up a while. Just sometime.
All right. We'll do Dooley, then Kathy, then Jim.
Yes. The EMC invited people from Syracuse down to share their information about their rain barrel, rain garden, rain catching, the building of large underground cisterns to carry stormwater and let it slowly out. And they made it very clear that, in their opinion, you cannot have stormwater fees of this sort. They would love to have done that, but they came up with this other infrastructure approach, which is wonderful the way it works. I'm very skeptical about the city's ability to do this in New York State. Other states I don't know about.
I'm just the messenger here.
Right.
He came to present this, in all fairness. He came to make sure that we stayed informed.
The city attorney was the one giving the briefing, so he seems to think it's legal. I don't know if it is, but he...
Kathy?
Just briefly, it occurs to me that something that Raleigh-Durham and Ithaca have in common is a lot of educational institutions, and that it might be possible that Ithaca would hope to gain some remunerative value from Cornell that they can't get any other way.
Jim?
No disrespect to the city. It's pretty clear to me they're in search of money. And can it be storm runoff water? Can it be the other fees that have recently been talked about? And it appears to me it's a way to get at the university and, to make them contribute more money. If I were attending their meetings, I would be looking to get government buildings exempt from that, from that fee, and certainly talk in that nature. I think cooperation is wonderful, but I think, everyone is looking for money in local government. And the city, most especially, they've been put upon more than as many cities have across New York State. And, I think we have to be careful about the conversation with them in terms of, how we're going to fit into that realm. But at this point.
Okay, can we move on? Charter review, I think Joe gave my report. I thought it was very good. It's fine. We'll see you tomorrow on that. Budget, capital, and personnel. Jim, anything else?
No, Michael. Thank you very much for the support of the two very key agenda items earlier. And we will have a meeting at some point. Kathy, I'm not sure when it is. The last Monday in June, I guess. Okay.
Brian,
thank you.
On the Public Safety Committee, you wanted to finish your report.
Yeah, just that we were scheduled to have a meeting next Monday. As of right now, there's only just a couple of items having to do with charter review. And quite frankly, we need a break after the whole jail issue. Time to step back and take a breather. There isn't enough on the agenda to actually warrant a meeting. And
Brian, there's no rest for the wicked.
Yeah.
You're calling me wicked?
Well, we're going to rest for this meeting anyway. So I guess the next one will be the first or second Monday in July.
Any questions for Brian? Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslin McBean Claiborne, Chair.
I absconded from the last Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee meeting at the request of the county administrator. No, I was at the airport interview thing. So I'm going to ask Kathy Lucerer, who was present and chaired the meeting, if there's anything to report.
Thank you, Leslin. The agenda was pretty simple, and it was basically announcements, which are always fun, and we find out about local community events that we can urge each other to attend and take part in. But the key point that was on the agenda that we looked at was the recruitment guide. In the past, the Diversity Consortium worked together with another local group to come up with a recruitment guide for local employers. And it was said to be very helpful to a lot of human resources professionals looking locally to enhance their diversity recruitment with organizations and even national lists that they could send the job openings to. So we were presented with a draft of the previous one that needed updating, and I believe Lisa Holmes offered to coordinate efforts, and a small committee was formed that is currently reviewing this. I think we'll be able to do it by email. Now, there were some other things on the agenda, but I think we didn't get to them. And as luck would have it, we convened early because I was chairing the meeting, and I decided that since we had done that one thing and I wasn't sure how to do the other thing and it could wait, so that's what we did. And I just confessed to everyone. So that was that. And, Leslin, back to you.
Questions? Kathy, you also chair our Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Can you go into that report?
You skip health and
I have no report.
Did I skip someone?
Yeah, me.
Human Services.
Oh, I'm sorry, Peter. Let me give Kathy a break then and
but
go
wait,
to Peter.
Wait, I'll have something by the time you come back.
All right. Peter Stein, sure. Health and Human Services Committee.
Okay, this one's pretty short. We haven't met since the last legislature meeting. We will meet a week from today at 3:30.
You maybe come back for that. Thank you, Peter. Any questions for Peter?
Okay.
Kathy?
Yes. Have y'all ever heard of Outside Magazine? I'm saying this because, and Will knows about this, you can help me with this announcement. Until midnight tonight, you can vote in this round, voting for America's best place to live. Right now, we're up against, what, Burlington, Vermont? And it's neck and neck. And look, Google Outside Magazine, best place to live, and you'll find it. I also found it on outsideonline.com, and then you just mess around till you find it. There's a 64 bracket, you know, like a regular thing, and we go vote. Because wouldn't that be fun? I mean, okay, I admit we're up against like Alpine, Texas, which is right outside Big Bend, Burlington, Vermont. I voted for Ithaca twice.
Now, is that a facilities or an infrastructure issue?
Facilities.
I
about
notice that
living.
I was out of order.
Not that there's anything wrong with Burlington. It's a very nice place.
Yeah, yeah, or Alpine, Texas.
Economic Development Committee. Will Burbank, Chair.
Well, thank you. We met yesterday, so our meeting is at least somewhat in my muddled brain. We heard a presentation from Julia Maddock at the Workforce Investment Board, who explained their dashboard, which tracks activity in the Career Center, our unemployment rate, labor participation rate, which is a little different than unemployment. That's how many people are actually out in the workforce. Unemployment rate for April, according to their estimates, was 3.5, which, once again, is pretty good relative to the rest of the state, if not the best. And they also she also gave an explanation of how they attempt to chart different sectors of our local economy and figure out which ones are growing, which ones are, you know, sort of easing off or in decline, and use that as they try to guide places like TC3 to develop programs that will help our future workforce. We also heard a report from Bruce Stoff of the Convention Visitor Bureau. He gave a quarterly report, and he gave us a bunch of statistics on our local hotel occupancy rates. So there's some good news and some bad news. Occupancy locally was actually a little down this year. It went from 51.3% down to 48.5%. However, he explained there's one hotel that's basically gone offline and stopped reporting, so that may be an anomaly. Another thing he reminded us of is that room rates locally are actually very high. I mean, they're some of the highest in New York State. Average room rate is $132, up from $129 last year. And part of the reason for that seems to be that essentially you can sell any hotel room on the weekends, and then, as we all have heard, the weekday rate occupancy is very, very low. And that is hurting our business. It's hurting cumulatively. We need to figure out ways to
to draw in midweek business. And one of the key things would be having the ability to host small regional conferences. And so and he talked what they're trying to do at the Visitor Bureau to just attract business even right now. We finally heard a presentation on the wayfinding report. And I don't know, some of you have already seen this maybe from another committee or whatever, but this was an attempt to basically figure out what we could do to improve the signage in our community that would make it easier for visitors to arrive here, get to where they want to go, and discover interesting things that we have to offer. And Jim McFeeters sort of led this effort as one of our last big projects at the Chamber. But she had the help of Lorraine Gilbert and Tom Knipe. And they've come up with a really, really good report. And I'm going to actually ask that Kathy send it out to you. It's very readable. And you will, if you take the time, you'll discover, oh, wow, that would really, really make things better. We would, you know, people arrive in our community, they literally, frequently don't know quite how to get anywhere. And this attempts to rationalize this and make people aware of our many wonderful attractions. The problem is that writing the report was one thing. Coming up with the money to actually implement it is another. The estimates are about $1.2 million to do a full new signage. They've have recommendations for how this could be done in pieces and how we could partner with different groups to make this happen. But somebody's going to have to take the initiative. And so read the report and see if you're inspired. And finally, we realized that we had some conflicts with dates for upcoming meetings. Both the July and the September meeting are adjacent to holidays. So I will be sending out some messages. We're trying to figure out what would be good alternative dates. So stay tuned for those alternative dates. And finally, by the way, we had brought to our attention a very important measure, which we will be discussing in the resolutions of the edge of the agenda, having to do with something that's happening at the state Senate and Assembly. So I'll talk about that more then. But that concludes my report for the committee.
You have a resolution, too. Are there questions for Will first, Jim?
Not a question. Bruce Stuff has taken over the reins of that Fred Bond used to have. And as we all know, Fred Bond was a walking advertisement for Tompkins County, and nobody did it better. I think Bruce has really done a great job stepping in a quiet sort of way. He's got a great sense of humor, really knowledgeable about what's going on in all of this. And I think he was a really good pick. Mm-hmm. To head that agency after Fred. And I was pretty impressed the other day with his presentation and his knowledge about what's going on, especially in the hotel world.
Jim, thank you for saying that. And one thing he's attempting to deal with is sort of the changing way that people get information. Historically, visitors' bureaus were places where people came and got literature, and we are moving to an age where most people are getting the information as they go places. They're getting them from portable devices, and that's a whole different model. And they're trying to really, really rethink everything and make it so it truly works for the future, and it's affordable, and hope to be a model. So, but thank you. I think Bruce is doing a great job. Any other questions?
Julie,
yeah, which hotel no longer reports?
The Trip.
Yeah. It's the old Clarion.
The Trip.
It's now called the Trip.
Yes.
Okay. Can you move on to your resolution, Will?
Thank you. So I'm going to move this resolution, and I'm going to turn it over to Joe maybe to help talk a little bit more. But this is Resolution M, urging New York State Legislature to reject S6870-A8203-A, the Just and Open Business Subsidy Act of 2014, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion. Joe Mariana.
I'll try to get it started, and Will can probably help me because we both heard from Heather the other day. This is an issue that came to us late last week from a fellow who's not prone to panic or overreaction, Michael Stamm, who brought to our attention a piece of legislation that is working rapidly through the state legislature, I think starting on the Senate side, and it's now also on the Assembly side. There are bills on both sides, which is referenced in this resolution. Again, Michael, not one prone to overreaction, is very concerned about the implications this will have on economic development everywhere, including in Tompkins County, who has a pretty good knack for being able to wisely apply the tools given to us by the state in our IDA and other areas. And if it affects us, it will certainly affect counties throughout New York State. Earlier tonight, I confirmed with NYSAC that NYSAC has a similar position on this bill. NYSAC is also opposing the bill that's, I'm looking for the bill number 6870 and Assembly 8203 that's moving through the legislature right now. There are a number of elements of this legislation. It's pretty exhaustive. And I think as you go through there, you will find things that all of us would probably find not so much offensive or objectionable, but maybe a little bit over the top. They've taken things a little bit too far. So I think there's a common set of issues in there that all of us would find of significant concern. There may be other elements in this that some of us would find pretty appealing in what has been packaged in here. And I can go through some of these things, but I think the overall source of concern is the fact that decisions that have been traditionally made at the local level by groups like our IDA and TCAD will in the future basically be offloaded to the regional councils. So IDA decisions regarding financial incentives or assistance will still happen in the first instance here, but have to be referred through to the regional council through the CFA, the Consolidated Funding Application Process, for a second round of review at that level. I suspect all of us will find that something that is really concerning. I think we know, again, how judiciously the tools are applied here, how our IDA, and I don't think we're necessarily unique, but our IDA is able to reflect the values and the priorities of the community. I think we do a good job at that. I suspect others do as well. I think it allows us to be nimble and respond to opportunities when they present themselves and able to move on a timeline that I think all of us know is important to being able to capture business opportunities. If you don't move at a certain pace, you get left behind, and the businesses that you're trying to assist, either they've missed their mark, they've missed their market, or they've gone elsewhere. And as we look at this Senate bill, there's really a lot of concern about how the timing will be affected and, again, local control will be affected if this bill were to pass. There are other elements in here that will also slow the process. For example, if there is a payment in lieu of tax agreement that's offered over a certain threshold, and it's not a very high threshold, it will go beyond what's now a governing policy in the IDAs, which is a uniform exemption policy. So currently, when the IDA considers a tax management plan, it is bound by an exemption policy that is really the product of stakeholder input some time ago. So some time ago, all the taxing jurisdictions got together and agreed that the policy that's been put forward by our IDA, in the case of other counties, their IDAs, is appropriate. Basically, in our case, it says that to the extent that we realize payment in lieu of tax revenue, it will be shared the same way we share taxes. So that would be replaced in the future by the need to go to each of the taxing jurisdictions affected by a payment in lieu of tax agreement and ask for their specific approval of that plan. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there would be disagreement, but it certainly does mean that there would be time added to a process that needs to move relatively quickly. There are recapture provisions that's I think the economic development community would look at as kind of a hair trigger and a non-nuanced approach to what we call clawbacks, where if a business doesn't meet its mark in terms of job creation and other goals, There's a very quick trigger and a very severe kind of binary trigger on recovering the incentives that were provided to that company, in spite of the fact that the inability to hit their marks may have been caused by things they don't control, by a bad economy, the loss of a customer, those kinds of things. So there are certain key elements in here that slow the process, that forego some local control. There are things in here such as an apprenticeship requirement that, again, some of us might find appealing when we look at that element. But the bottom line is this one has created some significant concern within the economic development community, including folks like TCAD, who are professionals in this field, who understand what the implications of this might be and are concerned that this may pass. So this resolution is intended to convey our concern and opposition to these pieces of legislation. We're joined in this by the Economic Development Council and by NYSEC, and I believe in a growing number of counties who are also weighing in opposition to it. So that's...
Thank you, Chair.
Questions, Jim Dennis.
Not a question. As a result of yesterday's meeting, I gave a phone call to our legislator, I've forgotten her name, Barbara Lifton, who is actually a co-sponsor of this bill, as she was riding east toward Albany this morning, and expressed to her some of the same concerns that were here, how it would essentially eviscerate local IDAs, and I asked that she reexamine and get information on her support for the bill based on at least our comments and others that she was having. And I was talking to her aide, and Barbara was nearby, and she was saying she'd heard many reports of negative feedback on this and was going to look into it when she appeared in Albany. And so I'm hoping that something will come, not of just my phone call, but all the people that have sent messages to Albany and our local rep. So.
Martha?
Thanks for bringing this to us. And, you know, I'm glad the committee had a chance to talk about it. Joe, you're really polite. what this would mean, I'm sure, is essentially nobody would ever bring a project to the IDA again. Now, you remember we all worked very hard to create a structure where IDA revenue or TCAD revenue would be approximately a third county, a third employers, you know, business investments, and a third IDA fees. This will stop deal flow. There will be no reason, like nobody will come to the IDA again. I'm sure of it. That they will not want to go through three municipal approvals. Now, by the way, going to the regional council means going to Albany as well as the council. So the CFA process, the consolidated funding application process, goes through Albany agencies. I think that adds a year. I think that adds a year to any application. It's done. This removes the one economic development tool that we have at the local level. And remember, the vast majority of the incentives that we have to offer are local taxes. It's local. It's property tax relief. And what's the matter? And sales tax, you know, local sales tax, yes, state sales tax. Local and state mortgage recording tax. We don't abate at our IDA. We don't abate the local mortgage recording tax. So there's a little bit of state tax money in this at all. The vast majority of the incentives that they're talking about controlling in Albany are incentives that's our property taxes that we decide we want to prioritize by helping businesses get off the ground, helping downtown. We would not see what we see in downtown Ithaca today were it not for the density policy. Downtown Ithaca would be a different place right now if this had been in place. So I think this is, you know, there's, yeah, there are abuses among in the IDAs out there, no question. The comptroller's office is working on that. They always have a report every year, and they work with individual IDAs to increase accountability and transparency. So we might consider this in the light of the, shall we say, ongoing battle between the comptroller and the governor, that the comptroller's working on a problem, and it seems that not good enough for the governor. Where are we in the Senate and in the Assembly? How far along is this? Do we know?
Right along. It's gone through one committee. I think it may have gone to Senate fine. I think it's going to the last step in the Senate approval process. The Assembly, I don't know that it's taken a vote. You know, I just looked.
I think it's still in committee, but it's a little hard to determine.
Okay. And so I think, the apprentice program incentive is, apprentice encouragement is great. You know, there's some things that obviously we want to create more transparency and accountability, but and want to make sure that jobs that are promised are delivered. But, you know, just to remind people, the businesses that come to our IDA, it's already kind of a pain in the neck. So if they don't really need it, they don't come. For example, Brian Warren on the new Seneca Way building right across from Gateway. They never came to the IDA. They, you know, he figured he could build a project, the numbers would work, and he didn't need to go through the process of the IDA. That's where we want to be. We want to be incentivizing businesses that need some help in order to succeed. So the ones that, you know, where we have an opportunity to move the needle, to encourage things to happen that otherwise wouldn't happen, that's what we're going to lose.
We've got a couple more committee reports. It's 9:15. I've got Carol, Peter, Kathy, and Dooley. Will.
Me? You're calling
Carol?
Me? Thank you. I certainly agree that Tompkins County's economic development arm is very effective and does a really great job. But we have all heard the stories out there of why this kind of bill has come forward. It was the effort. I don't know a whole lot about this bill. That the paperwork we've been given, which was printed out on May 29th, shows in the Senate one sponsor and four co-sponsors. For a Senate bill to pass, unless things have updated really quickly, that shows sort of a snowball's chance at you know where that this is going to pass the Senate. So, and I just feel like we got this yesterday. It's a pretty thick, complex bill. The coalition of 50 or so organizations that endorsed this thing called the Jobs Act talks about it in terms of requiring that proposed development projects set forth job creation, job quality, and local hiring goals before receiving public subsidies, that it increase accountability, that ensure that all publicly subsidized projects engage community stakeholders. So there's something in here that I haven't had a chance to read all of yet that involves engaging the community stakeholders. Establishing a money-back guarantee, so if projects fail to deliver, this is the big one we hear about. And so I'm just not feeling that we, with the chances of this actually getting through in this, in the next week or two, both bodies And with one of our elected representatives so far being listed as a sponsor, I mean, I think that we've registered our concern.
No, we haven't.
Well, people have registered their concern. Certainly you have, Jim, as you've just told us, and Michael Stamm has, I'm sure, has gone to talk to her. So I would be more in favor of, you know, leaving this up to the judgment of our elected officials or, you know, representatives who know more about it, the pros and the cons, because I just don't feel, I feel like we've sort of heard from one side but haven't had the time to hear from the others. And if we weren't so close to the end of session, I'd suggest tabling this for 2 weeks so that we could learn more about it if we want to weigh in.
And the session will be over by then.
Right. Well, that's what I was just going to say, but that's what you're going to tell me, that the session will be over by then. I just am not ready to weigh in favor of candidates.
Okay. So I think we understand your position, Carol. Kathy, let's keep everybody keep short. Kathy, Peter, Dooley, Will, and then Jim.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I want to talk about maybe was spoken about. I don't know. I was out of the room for a second. Unions are very concerned about this, and there was a reason for that. A lot of the IDAs in other jurisdictions have done things like not necessarily create local jobs, not necessarily consider community benefits. As a matter of fact, here, when I've served on the IDA, it's something that we've discussed a lot, and personally, I'd always like to see us do better. However, I got to give all due respect to Mike Stamm and the folks that are currently on the IDA. It's been already severely constrained, but the fact is I'm reluctant to let the state legislature try and control and regulate it because I think there's going to be some unintended consequences. I recognize that this is in some ways a reaction to the fact that community benefits often aren't considered when these public projects are undertaken, that often good local jobs are not considered, and that neither of those things actually come about a lot of times. Let's face it, there is graft and corruption. I'm not going to say that we're perfect here, and certainly with regard to the IDA, I think that we're exemplary. I'm somebody that can, you know, my motto is it can always be better. In spite of what flack I might take from the unions about this that are concerned and that have endorsed this, I believe that here locally for us, we don't necessarily stand to benefit from a state law like this. And I know I'll take some flack for it, but what I'm here to do is to represent my district and the county. So despite the concerns that are raised, I think it's important that as a county we weigh in on this, and I'm willing to vote for this resolution, urging the New York State Legislature to reject the so-called Just and Open Business Subsidies Act.
Peter?
Oh, I withdraw my...
Dooley?
Is there any competing legislation that addresses this?
Not that we're aware of, Dooley.
I read, all I had time to read was the finding statement, which is fine. Any number of things could follow that part of the bill. I would support what the comptroller might put forth, but I don't support this draft that I've heard described by Joe and Martha especially. So I'm glad you brought this, and I'll support it.
Will?
I apologize for the lateness and the complexity and the fact that we're bringing it to you, and maybe we, you know, did our best gathering what we could. The reality is that the process by which the Assembly and the Senate have used has been miserable in terms of, you know, you would have thought, okay, of course, hear the concerns of labor and whatever and attempt to address those abuses, but certainly talk with the people in local communities who have been doing economic development. There wasn't a single outreach attempt. We heard about this sort of indirectly. And I think that's why it's very important that we act right now while the legislature is coming to the end, that we make our concern known.
Jim?
The controller, as Martha mentioned, is looking into this and looking into IDAs all over the state all the time. We are going to be audited upcoming by the controller's office, a local IDA. And I think anyone who thinks that the state legislature can't pass a bill in 2 days is naive. What you really need to remember is the SAFE Act. And no matter what side of the coin you're on, that got passed immediately. And bills get passed in the county, in the state legislature at the end of the session all the time. There is a long history of getting deals done in the last 2 weeks. So please, we need to let them know that we don't like this legislation.
Brian, wrap us up.
Yep, I will. I'm skeptical. You kind of stole my thunder a little bit when you talk about the SAFE Act, but that alone would be enough. And I can't think of anything right off the top of my head where we do it locally and the state takes it over and does it better. I just can't think of anything.
Ready to vote on the resolution. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? One opposed. Is agreed to. Anything else, Will?
That concludes my report. Thank you.
Let's go to Government Operations Committee. Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
Yes. How many resolutions did you pull, Julia?
Yeah, just that.
One, just the Health Insurance Consortium one. I have Resolution F to approve the 2014 amendment to the Municipal Cooperative Agreement for the Greater Tompkins County Municipal Health Insurance Consortium.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter. Discussion? Julie?
I think I had placed in everybody's red folder changes that I suggested and that do not change the substance at all, but fix a little bit of wording and adds the original effective date. And that's all. And I asked Joe's opinion on whether this was risky to do. And he said, why don't I put it in the red folder and he would address it.
I did. I checked to make sure that if we modify this, it doesn't throw everything out of kilter, that this isn't a standard boilerplate. We're okay in changing this as long as the amendment itself stays the same.
And so for the folks around this room, what this means is that the amendment has to be approved by all the entities within the Health Insurance Consortium. There was a concern that if we modify the language of the resolution that everybody's passing, that it would somehow interfere with that. But what Joe and Dooley are suggesting here, or what Dooley's suggesting and Joe's verified, is that by having this Dooley suggested resolution itself, it doesn't change the amendment. And that's the amendment is the important thing that's being approved. So, therefore, that's friendly to me. I would love to.
Is it friendly to the seconder?
Peter, is that friendly to you, Peter?
Are we ready to vote on this? Mm-hmm. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
All right. For the rest of the Government Operations Committee, we have the resolutions that were passed during the consent agenda. Also, we did have a very lengthy discussion about the rules of the legislature as it pertains to privilege of the floor and public comment. And so the way that the rules of the legislature are stated right now is that we don't actually – there is no public comment that is necessarily ingrained within the rules of the legislature. The way it's formatted is that the chair has the opportunity to designate a time to allow people 3 minutes to speak. And if he or she feels needed, an additional 2 minutes. And then if anybody goes beyond 5 minutes, that it requires a vote of the legislature. So that is the current rules. Now, if the chair does not want somebody to speak, then then members of the legislature may ask for somebody to have the chance to speak. So I guess the point of this is that public comment is truly, as it is stated in the rules of the legislature, a privilege that is granted by the chair and by members of this legislature. And so when looking at the rules, the committee decided that it wasn't needed to get any more specific about that, and instead that because so much is at the discretion of the chair, that we should just keep it that way. Which gives us some freedom, for example, to have those blue sheets that we already have and make modifications to that. And then those modifications then only really require the approval of the chair. And hopefully the chair, of course, will get the feedback of folks around this room. So we decided not to take any action on the rules of the legislature. What we are going to do is that with those blue sheets, there is some clarification that could be used. And then also we wanted to, you know, right now it talks about libelous language, and Dan brought up the good point that when people are speaking, it's slanderous language. So we're going to make that kind of change. We also asked Jonathan to develop language that's going to help us make clear the point about how it's okay for people, even though we don't like it, it's okay for people to criticize and talk about legislators. But when they talk about employees, we wanted to make sure that we have the right language to make them very aware of the ramifications of that. And so Jonathan is going to be drafting such language. We're going to take it to the committee, discuss it, and then hopefully have a draft that we can present to Mike. And obviously, it's not something that's really voted on, but I would gladly, of course, get any feedback from folks, once we have a draft.
Nathan, I want to thank you and your committee for taking this up and talking about it, because even if you decide that it's up to me to make these decisions, having it talked about and having advice is very important to me.
Yeah. And another thing, too, is that the rules of the legislature are very clear that the chair has a lot of discretion over the agenda itself. And so there may be times when the chair chooses to have public comments, be before the beginning of the meeting or after or towards the end of the meeting, likewise to have legislature comment as we did tonight in different parts of the meeting. But that is something that we thought we didn't need to change, that we should continue to allow the chair to have that power.
Jim, then Martha.
Along after Nate's comments, I thought the shot clock worked very well this evening. It was there. People were watching it. And it was not obtrusive in a way, and it kind of gave a suggestion without you or someone else doing that. So that was a good idea.
It worked, I thought, pretty well from this standpoint, too. Yeah. I thought the audible signal, a gentle signal, was reminded people nicely.
Yeah.
So whoever thought that up, great idea.
Came out of your committee.
Yeah. Oh, and also along the lines, we also made a number of security recommendations in the committee that I'm not going to talk about, here. But Joe has said that those recommendations were implemented by the facilities department as well.
Martha?
Yeah. Since I won't, not part of GO, I would just say I really think the public needs the ability to criticize our staff if they want to do that, and it's a way of accountability, and we may not like it. I think it's good courtesy that we don't do that, and that's in our rules, because we obviously have personnel functions. If we have a problem with a staff person, we don't need to do it in public, but I don't think it's appropriate for us to be telling the public that they can't criticize a county staff person.
Well, we actually can't tell them Jonathan can kind of elaborate in it, but we can't tell them to criticize or praise. We're going to stay away from that. We're just going to specify, what if one talks about county employees, what is involved with that. I don't know. Jonathan, you could probably say it more clearly than
right.
I.
Well, it will come back because we did revise it, and it will come back to the committee, but...
Yeah.
Just the basic principle is when you speak before the legislature, there's no right to do that, no constitutional right, and the legislature can set forth what things people can address the legislature at. For example, we'll take comment on a landfill or things like that, and we can limit subjects. I think the original thing about criticizing county employees, I think, resulted from the idea that that personnel matters shouldn't be discussed. And it's actually became somewhat problematic where some people were coming and criticizing employees and others were saying positive things about the employees. Mm-hmm. And you can't say, you can say positive things about the employees,
right,
but
exactly.
Not negative things about the employees, because that has a constitutional implication that you can't regulate speech. But the intent was never that people can't criticize the employees. The intent was basically that personnel matters weren't appropriate for public. again, if you allow people to criticize employees, or then you have to allow them to praise employees, and if you allow them to praise employees, then you have to allow them to criticize employees. So the real issue is going to be whether the legislature wants to limit the discussion of personnel matters. Personnel matters does not include discussion of elected officials. The committee decided that in the draft they wanted to see something like that, and then it will come.
Yeah, and I urge folks, instead of having a discussion right now about it,
right,
that we are going to have that language. We don't know what that language is, and we will discuss it at the committee level.
Right. And they asked us to draft language, and it will be on the next committee agenda. And then based on what the committee thinks, it will come back here for discussion.
Yeah.
So the whole legislature will have...
I'm certainly fine during my report bringing it back up. I mean, it doesn't require a vote, so clearly I'll take advice. But I don't really know what I'm working with yet. So
okay.
So let's wait until then.
Okay, and about the clock, I wonder if we could have a 30-second beep at 30 seconds and then at a minute.
You'd have to find a program that does that. This is when we took off the Internet.
Okay. I just think that the folks they're used to that warning or something, and I think a lot of people went over because they did. I don't know. Just a thought.
Okay. I've lost track. Who had their hand up next? Peter, I think it was, and then Carol and Kathy.
Yeah, I just want to say quickly, I'll put my view on the floor, that I think that the less restraint that we ought to let people say what they want to say. Members of the public. I don't think it will hurt any of us, and I believe in free speech, and we ought to hear what people have to say.
Okay. Carol?
Yeah, I agree, and I just wanted to compliment Mike on the things that you've instituted so far, and I think that tonight was witness that they are working. It was a much more reasoned discussion tonight than we've had on a hot button issue in the past. The only thing that we might in the future, I mean, the clock I think really helped a lot, in addition to considering whether there's anything out there that would be a warning, whether that be at 15 or 30 seconds or whatever. If this doesn't continue to work as well as it did, I have seen this work so that the tone that people hear starts out low as they finish and rises, but doesn't go away. So eventually it gets louder and it encourages people to finish up.
Yes, it'll be an evolutionary.
Kathy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Nathan, for getting working on this. The 2 cents I'd like to add is that I agree that it's a privilege. I think that it's something that I'll be asking people that are running for chair of the legislature about, because clearly I think it's appropriate that the chair of a committee or of the legislature has that discretion. And it's a very important thing when you're dealing with county issues. So I think it's something we should take into account, especially now that I hear the stuff about the blue thing being changed, because you know what? That could be changed every year then, but it won't. So whatever goes on, it is probably going to be around for 10 years, and I, like others, tend to go for less restraint rather than more, and I like the notion of being able to extend time. We got a community that likes to give input, and we often learn from it.
Okay. Can we move on? See if we can get done tonight. Old Library Committee will meet on Thursday, and we will be hearing from the City of Ithaca, and we'll be hearing from folks at Lifelong about the various REIFs. Kathy?
Do we, the Old Library Committee, have a report?
The only report we have is the working document that was sent to us by the Planning Advisory Committee.
And that's been made public, correct?
That's up in the air, and we'll be talking about that tomorrow. I've asked Jonathan and Joe to give me an opinion about whether we should, that is a public document at this point.
Okay, I'm sorry. I've been misinforming people. Thanks.
Anything else? Last one.
Mr. Chair, I just want to, I saw the agenda and I just wanted to double check. At our last meeting, we talked about inviting the all the people who represent that ward to the meeting. And were they invited?
I know we went around and round, but the ones that I think we invited were the mayor and the director of planning.
I remember the director of planning. I remember the mayor, but I also recall us saying the older people.
And the chief of staff. I certainly would have no objection to having the older people come if they'd like to do that, but I don't think we actually settled on that. In fact, at one point, we're talking about just having the director of planning come, as I recall.
No,
would you like us to send out an invitation?
I would say yes.
To which older people? All of them?
No, just the two older people who represent the ward in which the old library, I think,
is
located. That's Seth, I think it's Seth Murtaugh and J.R. Clearborn.
Okay. I'd be glad to do that.
Thank you.
Anything else on that? Can we take the minutes of May 20th? Peter has moved them. Seconded by Mike. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Is there a motion to adjourn? Peter? Seconded by Mike. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you all very much.